Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. Take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Good evening. You are live with Tex and Rex. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from the Imperial City, specifically I-495, the ninth circle of hell around the city. And tonight we're going to be talking about why this Imperial City must be destroyed.
And this is Tex, broadcasting from high above Houston in the Crystal Cathedral. Once again, we gather you together. So, Rex, what is on the agenda for today?
Well, Tex, I mean, you know, with everybody's hyped up commercialist preparation for buying useless crap to give to each other in celebration of Jesus' birthday, and the
Rex, we've lost you. We have no sound.
We are experiencing technical difficulties because Blog Talk Radio is a backwards technology. I apologize for that. I was saying that, you know, with all the preparation for the commercialist, consumerist Christmas and the need for the oligarchy to keep us distracted to their duopolistic machinations, there's really not much going on in the news cycle other than, you know, ancillary crap, and we're overshadowed by certain dastardly deeds that are done around the country and are overplayed in the media. But one thing that has been going on quietly in the background are these alleged fiscal cliff negotiations. And it seems to me, Tex, that we're just getting releases on a consistent basis that sort of unfold this negotiation almost as if somebody knew already what it was before it happened. Is that what you're noticing?
Yeah, pretty much. I think essentially what's going on is Boehner realizes he's sort of got his ass in a sling, and he can't negotiate this thing over the airwaves with the president, and he certainly isn't trying to rally the Republican base because he figures, well, who needs him, you know, for this deal? I'm just going to go quietly into that good night, and I will, you know, steal a vote with Obama right before Christmas when nobody's paying attention to prevent the so-called fiscal cliff from happening. Everyone will paint that as victory because nobody knows the details of what the deal is. And when they are announced, the detail will be success, and that pretty much is all you're going to know about what happens. They're not really going to talk about the details very much. But Boehner is maintaining a public face that we have to stand up for conservative principles. That would be a first, John. You know, maybe you do, but you're not the guy to do it, unfortunately. So privately, he's talking with Obama, and they're cutting deals. You notice they meet, and they come out, and they don't talk about anything. They don't say what they discussed. They say, well, the president's not serious. And then he keeps saying in the same speech over and over again that this isn't serious, not serious, not serious, not serious. And, you know, Obama's got his rhetoric as well, but it's all political posturing because the deal's being made right now. If it's not done already, there may be a few finishing touches on it, post offices that have to be named this, that, or the other to get various congressmen, senators to vote for it. But that's about it. So,
yeah.
I mean, there's not even a lot of sturm and drang over it. You know, they sold out. They've got their little rhetorical flutters, and that basically is what's going on. It actually reminds me when Nixon went over to China and cut a deal, well, sort of negotiated ahead of time, but
yeah.
They went over and they said, you know, that, okay, well, you and the Soviets almost went to war, and that being China. China and the Soviets, they had a border dispute. Let's forget the name of the river because it's irrelevant. But anyway, so they had a border dispute, and the Chinese were like, okay, look, we don't really like the Russians. We need another ally against Russia. So they looked to us, and, you know, Nixon basically co-opted China onto our side. But the Chinese said, well, although we do support you in what you're doing and we want to work with you and all that kind of stuff, publicly, we will still need to curse you in our newspapers and our airwaves because it will be very confusing for our people if we turn on a dime like this. And John Boehner is doing very much the same thing. He has already turned on a dime privately to the Democrats and Barack Obama, actually, as is traditional Republican rhino history, turned on a dime and sold out the conservatives, who are always the people standing up for principles of limited government, the Constitution, but are unwanted in Washington. And when they are identified in Washington, a big campaign starts to eliminate them from the Congress one way or another.
Yep.
So that's what's going on.
That is exactly what's going on. And interestingly enough, you've got prominent conservative Republicans like Justin Amash, Rand Paul, Ron Paul, Jim DeMint, Newt Gingrich, just ripping these guys apart. And so now we're getting media narrative that is making this sound as if, you know, Boehner and Obama are locked in this duel that's going to either force us off the cliff or they're going to come to a negotiating deal and everything will be perfect again in America, because if we avoid the fiscal cliff, happy days will be here again, the second Great Depression will be over, the wars will end, a unicorn will fly over every house, and everybody will have everything they ever dreamed of. You know, it's crap, because first of all, we already went off the cliff, and this is just another bump in the cliffs. And then second of all, it's just a rhetorical mess that the Republicans created, and now they're playing this game of footsies with Obama, who runs around as he's got some kind of superior mandate. I mean, this guy won re-election with 13% less voters, and John Boehner acts as if he's not the Speaker of the House, other than that he gets, you know, red carpet treatment, three-day binge parties, and Secret Service detail, when in fact the Speaker of the House is the single most powerful man in the country when it comes to controlling the purse strings. And it's either that he doesn't know that power, doesn't want to use that power, or is merely feigning the use of that power for conservative ends, when in fact he is just promoting the typical Keynesian corporatist agenda. Now, that's what I was
thinking. Well,
you know, so, go ahead.
Rex, if he doesn't know that power, Gingrich wrote a helpful article that we read on this show that laid out how you could actually do it. It's like how to be Speaker of the House 101. Things you could do, suggestions to John Boehner. And you know what? I think the media started getting worried, like, holy crap, is that Gingrich again? You know, letting Boehner copy off his sheet, how to run the House of Representatives. We can't allow that. And so now they're upset with Gingrich because he's been all over the airwaves stating very simple things, as Gingrich always was able to do. He's a very effective and good communicator. Here's the steps you do. You don't need a fiscal cliff. This is completely at the Speaker of the House's discretion. You can break it down to a series of foothills, and you can deal with them, you know, in time. And so he lays out various strategies. Well, that kind of lays bare the fact that Boehner is not going to do those things and is running at full gallop to surrender. And Gingrich has said, you know, we don't need a surrender caucus in Congress.
Yes,
and
that's exactly what he said. Those are inflammatory words.
Yes. Gingrich is a well-known bomb thrower, as you know. Just ask many a rhino about their experience with getting gored by Gingrich for being rhinos and not standing up for what they claim their party believes in.
Correct.
So the media is quite upset with him, and they have, you know, a collar around John Boehner's neck, and they're just leading him around Washington now, and they don't like it that Gingrich is pointing out how blatantly obvious it is that Boehner has completely sold out and has actual power to do something about it, but is totally unwilling to.
Yeah, I think that is the story that we are getting, the corporatist media agenda that we're being fed. And what Tex was referring to, That article, which you can find, I think it's Human Events, you can find it on Gingrich Productions. You can find it on the Tex and Rex Show Facebook page. So I would recommend if you're on Facebook, go to the Tex and Rex Show page, make sure you like the page, share it with your friends, and you will find all the articles that we discuss and video clips on that page, as well as postings for the show. So we'd appreciate it if you would like our page. And also in Blog Talk Radio, just click follow under the show icon in your Blog Talk Radio profile. You will receive notifications as to when we are broadcasting. Typically, we broadcast 10 p.m. Eastern on Sundays. You can go back and listen to last week's show. It's in the archives, so you can just you can download the MP3 by right-clicking on it, email it to your friends, and share it with people, or you can just listen right in your browser or mobile device. So I strongly recommend you go back and listen to last week's show, where we basically laid out the Newt agenda for how Speaker Crying Tan Beef Jerky John Wussy Boehner could actually manage Barack Obama, and he hasn't been. But if you want to ask us any questions about what we're discussing tonight, call-in number is 646-649-1013. Let me repeat that, 646-649-1013. And, Tex, it's funny you should mention the media. You know, we've got this, kind of this false left-right paradigm in this duopoly that we're being sold all the time. So apparently on the left you've got MSLSD or MSNBC, and on the right, you got Fox News or Fox News, and somehow we're supposed to believe that both of them are promoting the left or the right agenda, but they're telling us the truth when, in fact, both of them are just selling us the same corporatist viewpoint. But there is this one insipid character who has done a piece on Newt Gingrich. I think he actually interviewed him on Meet the Press also. Larry O'Donnell. Are you familiar with this guy? I think he replaced that other moron, Keith Olbermann.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't know exactly who he was. I thought he was, that big lesbian comedian with the talk show. But that's apparently Rosie O'Donnell, and I don't think there is a relation.
No. Different branches of the same family tree, probably.
Yeah, perhaps.
Same bad apples. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, so I got this clip. Now, the interesting thing here is at first hand you get a little excited because it seems as if someone's given Newt props that no one seems to want to give him from back when he was Speaker of the House. But it's done in a very clever, propagandist way with kind of left-handed compliments and sneaky words designed to manage our perception. And I believe that this is happening by order of the Black Hand or the omnipotent oligarch masters somewhere to get this kind of message out, precisely because of what you said. Newt is out there talking. He's speaking conservatism. He's speaking in principle and from experience, and he's laying out not only a conservative agenda, but constitutional and practical ways by which to implement it. Rather than this image of this imperial presidency we have, ostensibly since Congress abdicated their power to declare war, you do have an imperial presidency when it comes to indefinite detention, illegal drone strikes, undeclared wars. But when it comes to the purse, the Constitution is still in play. I mean, obviously the fundamental problem is that we've handed the purse over to the Bernanke, the Federal Reserve, and all those other Keynesian bastards, but when it comes to actual appropriations, the House is where revenue bills originate, which makes the Speaker of the House the most powerful man when it comes to holding the purse strings and not the President of the United States. John Boehner either doesn't understand this or he's too much of a wuss to do anything about it, and like you said, with Newt Gingrich out there laying out this agenda, with the pressure coming from current Senator Rand Paul, current congressman who apparently has been removed from his committee position for not towing the party line, Justin Amash, Hulskamp, Schweikert, Jones, Representative Gohmert from Texas down your way, Newt Gingrich, Jim DeMint, who is leaving the Senate now to head up the Heritage Foundation. Basically, I think on Rush Limbaugh, someone joked and said, so you're not being pushed out of the Senate by Boehner. And DeMint just kind of laughed. He goes, no, it's more like the other way around. a hint that conservatives are pushing Boehner out of Congress, which I thought was pretty fantastic, and I think we are going to hear a lot more from DeMint. But we're going to do something we typically don't do, and I'm not sure how it'll work because we're radioactive, and seldom do either one of us manage to be quiet for more than 30 seconds, let alone 10 minutes. But this is a 10-minute clip, but I want to set it up. I want you to listen to it, and I want you to notice the facts, especially if you've followed Newt Gingrich in the past. You know what he's done. Follow the facts, but also look at the subtle use of language that O'Donnell uses to kind of put Newt into a little box because they don't want him running around talking about these things. It makes this kabuki theater fiscal cliff negotiation next to impossible for them. On the other side of this, we'll be dissecting it, then we'll take some calls. So if you have any questions about the clip or about John Boehner specifically, give us a call, 646-649-1013. Tex, you got anything to add before I let Larry O'Donnell roll?
Let her rip.
Here we go.
¿Quién es más macho? Bebo Johnson, Lloyd Bridges, o Jack Lloyd? Yo repito, David Johnson, Lloyd Bridges, o Jack Lloyd.
Lloyd Bridges.
Sí, Lloyd Bridges.
In tonight's episode of Quien es más macho, who is more macho? Ronald Reagan, the first President Bush, President Bill Clinton, or the man who will never be president, Newt Gingrich? Who among those four men has had the most important and lasting influence on our politics and our governing? Republicans will all say Ronald Reagan, and they will all be wrong because they no longer understand Ronald Reagan or themselves. No one will say one-term President George H.W. Bush, and everyone will be right about that. Democrats will say Bill Clinton, and they will be wrong. That leaves the last man standing, Newt Gingrich. I think that I can safely assume that none of you chose Newt Gingrich as the person who had the most important and lasting influence on our politics and our governing. And that is because the American media covers the presidency the way the British media covers the monarchy. They pretend that we have a king. They pretend that no one could possibly be more important in the governance of the United States than the president. The media simply refuses to comprehend how powerful Congress is and how powerful the Speaker of the House can be, something the Founding Fathers clearly understood, which is why the Speaker comes right after the Vice President in the line of succession to the presidency. Why are Republicans wrong when they say that Reagan was such a great president? Because nothing of Reaganism survived his presidency. There is no Reagan legacy. Republicans lie to themselves, and they try to lie to history about Reagan being an anti-tax fanatic, like Republicans have become. But the Republicans' beloved St. Ronald raised taxes 11 times as president. That's 10 times more than Bill Clinton raised taxes as president. Ronald Reagan also cut taxes as president. So, what was Reagan? A tax raiser or a tax cutter? The answer is both. And the tax raiser side of Reagan would be condemned in today's Republican Party. Much was made this year on this program and elsewhere that Ronald Reagan could not possibly have won the Republican nomination for president in 2012 without changing his positions on everything. Bill Clinton left nothing after his presidency, no Democratic legislative monuments. Bill Clinton had a cooperative Congress, Democratic Congress, for only two of his 8 years. In those 2 years, the most important legislative achievements he accomplished were two trade bills and one budget bill. The two international trade bills had been mostly negotiated by the Republican presidents before him and had strong support from Republicans and Democrats. The North American Free Trade Agreement and the World Trade Agreement that created the WTO are the most important things left standing today from the Clinton presidency. In his first year, President Clinton bravely pushed through a Democratic Congress with no Republican votes, a hugely important deficit reduction bill, half of which was the largest tax increase in history, the other half of which were the largest set of Medicare cuts in history as of that time. Clinton's final 6 years as president left him as a relatively minor editor of a Republican Congress's budgets. The Clinton presidency also brought us Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which is no longer with us, and the Defense of Marriage Act, which the Obama administration now refuses to defend in court. And so, as soon as President Clinton was out of office, the tax code he had rewritten to be more progressive was immediately rewritten by this guy to be less progressive. When George W. Bush rewrote the Clinton tax rates to be friendlier to the rich, some Democrats in the House and Senate voted for the new Bush tax rates. There was no lasting Clintonian tax principle that could hold Democrats together against the Bush tax cut. Some Democrats who had voted for the Clinton tax rates actually voted for the Bush tax rates. So nothing of Reaganism, whatever that was, lived after the Reagan presidency, and nothing of Clintonism lived after the Clinton presidency. What then of Gingrichism? Newt Gingrich was in Congress during all three of the presidencies we've considered here: Reagan, the first Bush, and Clinton. During the Reagan years, when Republicans started drifting toward budget agreements with Democrats to raise taxes, Newt Gingrich attacked those Republicans. He wasn't willing to take on President Reagan head on, but in 1984, he actually called Senator Bob Dole, quote, the tax collector for the welfare state. Never mind that Republican Senator Dole was doing President Reagan's legislative bidding. He was condemned by then junior Congressman Gingrich just for considering tax increases. When Bill Clinton pushed for the tax increase that he got in 1993, Newt Gingrich said, quote, the tax increase will kill jobs. Newt was opposed to all tax increases, but he knew he couldn't simply say, I'm opposed to all tax increases. He had to come up with a reason that he could sell, at least to other Republicans, Republicans who'd voted for tax increases before. The tax increase will kill jobs. Newt Gingrich, who was not then the leader of the Republicans in the House of Representatives, controlled every Republican vote and every Republican vote in the Senate on Bill Clinton's deficit reduction bill. And because it cut spending but raised taxes, every Republican in the House and the Senate voted against it. They voted the way Newt Gingrich wanted them to vote. The same Republicans who a few years earlier were negotiating with Democrats over tax increases under President Reagan would not even discuss any form of a compromise on the Clinton tax bill for fear of being caught by Newt Gingrich considering a tax increase, for fear of being labeled the tax collector of the welfare state. On Friday, John Boehner said this about the tax increase on the top income tax brackets that President Obama wants. Quote, I oppose tax rate increases because tax rate increases cost American jobs. Every Republican you have ever heard opposing tax increases in the last 20 years has used words dictated to them by Newt Gingrich. Not one Republican is left who uses the Reagan concept of keep taxes as low as possible, but raise them as little as possible when necessary. There is not one Republican left in Congress who is a Reaganite on taxes. All of them are Gingrichites. How strong and enduring is the Gingrich legacy of opposing any and all tax increases? There is exactly one. One Republican left in the House of Representatives who voted for the last tax increase compromise that any Republican voted for, the one President George H.W. Bush signed into law in 1990. Exactly one. The Gingrich anti-tax legacy is more powerful than anything President Reagan and President Clinton left behind. Gingrich did not just give Republicans a permanent talking point. the tax increase will kill jobs. He gave them a belief, a near religious belief, the tax increase will kill jobs. He gave them the first commandment of republicanism. All tax increases must be opposed and must be condemned as job killers. And so John Boehner today remains trapped, not by Tea Party conservatism, but by Gingrichism, the most lasting and powerful force in our politics of the last 30 years. Here's what else Newt Gingrich said in 1993, opposing the Clinton tax increase. Quote, the tax increase will kill jobs and lead to a recession, and the recession will force people off of work and onto unemployment and will actually increase the deficit. Of course, Newt was completely wrong about that, as I pointed out to him yesterday on Meet the Press, but religious belief never fears being wrong, because in the realm of religious belief, nothing is provable. There are no facts. Newt Gingrich suffered a lot of humiliation in the last year on his road to losing the Republican presidential nomination. The political media will forever regard him as a loser, and Ronald Reagan as a winner, and Bill Clinton as a winner. But a winner of what? It turns out Newt Gingrich was playing a longer game than either one of those presidents ever could. And so, yes, it's Newt Gingrich who had the most important and lasting influence on our politics and on our governing, more so than any of the presidents he served under. And every word John Boehner says to President Obama about taxes now, every word was written for him by Newt Gingrich.
God, that Lawrence O'Donnell's really a loser. How do you deal with that much truth and half-truth all mixed together in one potent combination of bullshit? That's not easy to do.
I liked him much better when he was Betty Rubble in that movie, The Flintstones. That was Rosie O'Donnell. I confuse these two all the time.
He was playing that role before he started cross-dressing as a man now.
Yes, perhaps. But I got to say, it's quite masterful. But I really don't think that Larry O'Donnell came up with this on his own.
That clearly was written for him.
Yeah,
Spinmeister's galore on the Democrat side.
The psychological trickery and the wordsmithing is masterful in this piece, because on the surface, it seems to be, with that Bill Murray clip at the beginning, who's more macho, it seems to be setting Newt up as, hey, this is Newt Gingrich. He's the guy that did all these things in the 90s that we give Bill Clinton credit for. Yeah, we've been telling you that all along. Have you noticed that up until after the election, nobody, not a Republican, not Fox News, not any of the media, not any Democrat, not even Bill Clinton, nobody would give Newt credit for this stuff. It was all Bill Clinton, and it was touted as good stuff. Now we're giving it to Newt as credit in this piece that speaks about how great Newt is, with all of these underhanded twists to diminish him. If Newt is so irrelevant, why are you talking about him, Mrs. O'Donnell? Why? Why is he such an issue? That's what I want to know.
he has come back, and he has reared his head to challenge John Boehner, and Newt Gingrich has a lot of credibility with conservatives in the House, and I imagine he's probably rallying his troops, and they're pulling strings behind the scenes to help oust John Boehner from his position. But what they're worried about, and the mainstream media is worried about, is that their deal is going to collapse, because their man Boehner, he's got his head in a trap. Uh-oh, didn't see that. So now he's like, shit, how am I going to get out of this? I can't go up and start talking, negotiating this thing in public, because I'm going to sell out. See, this is the problem, I want to say, before we get to Lawrence O'Donnell, but this is the problem with the strategy that they adopted. How did you create a physical cliff? Not a physical, but a physical cliff. How did you create a physical cliff? Well, it was created, forget who conceived of it and came up with this idea as a concept. Some people say the Democrats came up with it. Some people say the White House came up with it. The Speaker of the House is the person who decides what legislation reaches the floor and gets voted on. So at some point, whoever came up with this brain fart called the fiscal cliff got it to John Boehner. John Boehner's like, yeah, let's create that. That's going to be a good thing. And his idea was that they were going to write it to electoral victory, him and Karl Rove, in the presidential election. And that this thing would be so bad that you would actually vote for a Massachusetts, someone from Massachusetts, to be president. Okay, they've tried these Massachusetts guys four times since 1960. It never works. Nobody wants them. Make sure Massachusetts dudes don't want to see him. Kennedy is the only one it worked for, all right? But then what he thought was, John Boehner, Mitt Romney will come along, will be the new moderate rhino Republican Party, and Mitt Romney will be up there taking all the blows. And since he's such a nice, likable guy, why, who's even nicer than Mitt Romney? Who starts sentences, declarative sentences with why? I don't know, Mitt Romney does. But
why
Boehner
I like
thought he was going to have to cover.
Why?
I like starting sentences with the word why.
Why Costco?
Why Costco? I don't know. Why I like Costco? And a list of reasons does not come after that. That's just a declarative sentences. Anyway, so Boehner now is stuck in the unfortunate position of having to eat his own shit. He's like, oh, crap, I created this problem because I let this get to the floor. And I, being... if I was paying attention to Speaker of the House, I would have known that the votes were there to pass for this bill to pass, and I shouldn't have let it come to the floor if I didn't want it to be enacted. So it came to the floor because he wanted it enacted. But he thought he was going to have Romney giving him cover. Now he doesn't have Romney giving him cover, and he's completely exposed. And he is facing a revolt within his own party, and probably his job as Speaker of the House is pretty much going to go.
Yep. Did you say that he's eating his own rhino shit?
Well, yes. Yes, I did.
Okay.
Pardon my French. Eating his own merde.
Merde. Je m'appelle Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
It'll never be unfun to make fun of Mitt Romney. I mean, it's just...
No, exactly. Well, so a couple things about this Lawrence O'Donnell piece. First, he starts out... He sets up, the interesting thing is he sets up all these presidents and then he puts Newt Gingrich up there, right?
Yeah.
So that should show you how powerful Newt Gingrich is. You know, he's a guy who stood up to presidents and accomplished an agenda. Sometimes he wasn't even the Speaker of the House when he did that, and he was still successful. So
mm-hmm.
That's how, you know, strength of character and clear principles, strong principles can change the game and make the day. But he adds, he starts this out, Newt Gingrich, the man who will never be president.
Oh,
okay,
just
well,
that remark is masterful. What a sneaky, underhanded thing.
Yes, because remember, Mitt Romney is the most electable, and he's inevitable. So now, Newt Gingrich is the man who will never be president. Okay, do you see how you're already being conditioned? To accept that, yes, we know you liked Newt Gingrich. We know that voter turnout was up in South Carolina. We know that people wanted Newt Gingrich to be the nominee because he's an actual successful conservative who stands for what the Republican Party claims publicly to stand for but privately disdains. And you were ready to march through hell and high water to go vote for him. Except you have a weakness, and that is you believe whatever you hear. And so if they tell you that Mitt Romney is the inevitable nominee, and he's the most electable, and he's going to win, and Romney goes out there and picks up all of Nancy Pelosi's crap that she brought against Newt Gingrich when he was Speaker of the House. I mean, hell, she probably drove out there in her limo to the Romney campaign headquarters and handed Romney the file personally, and he said, thanks, Nancy. And they started reading from it in Florida to get rid of Gingrich. And people, they just bought into it because all of a sudden there's this negative media campaign. And then Karl Rove, who's a, you know, neutral political observer, and he's just, you know, looking at the game neutrally, and he's not a participant in any way at all, starts saying, well, Newt Gingrich can't win, and it's going to be, don't pay attention to Ron Paul. It's going to be Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum, he's got a lot of interesting things. He keeps coming in third place, but I really see him rising. I mean, he created the bubble because Karl Rove said it, you believed it. So that's part of the problem.
America is never going to elect a guy in a sweater vest president. I mean, that's just not going to happen. Sorry.
Yeah,
I just had to make that observation.
The citizens of Pennsylvania basically not only told him to get the hell out, but they slammed the door on his ass when he walked through it. Okay, so let's get down to, well, I want to say something because this guy's not going to be talked about too much. But he said, George Bush Sr., no one says that he's the most macho. Yeah, well, that's because in 88, I remember his biggest problem was the wimp factor. Okay, so hard to come back and be the most macho, you know, when your campaign was sort of dominated by the wimp factor. And the only thing that overcame the wimp factor was they talked Michael Dukakis to getting in a tank with that stupid helmet, and it made him look like a bigger wimp. That really is that, and read my lips, no new taxes, which was a lie, are the only things that got him over the top. So he says that Reagan, what is the Reagan legacy? Reagan raised taxes 11 times. Reagan couldn't even get nominated by his own party now. Okay,
yeah.
A couple things. Reagan ran on the tax revolt back in the 70s. The highest marginal tax rate on incomes back in the 70s under Carter was 79%. I know. I've seen the freaking books. You know, I used to work in accounting. We had all the accounting, you know, PPC books up there. You get it, and it says exactly what the heck the thing is. And I opened it up, I got it, and I Xeroxed it because I was like, holy crap, I can't believe taxes used to be that high. So I was very young then.
And that's after Kennedy lowered them.
Yes.
After Kennedy lowered them to 70%.
Yes, exactly. Well, here's something some people don't know.
That dead conservative tax cutter, John F. Kennedy, how dare he lower taxes?
Yeah. A lot of people don't know this, but the highest marginal rate the United States ever had was actually 98%. This was during World War II. It was enacted by Franklin Roosevelt, and they said, why didn't you just raise it to 100%? He said, because I want to leave 1% for the state and 1% for the city. So that's as high as taxes ever were. So we've been coming down ever since. Well, then Reagan gets in office, and he enacts a tax cut plan, right? And it comes in three phases. Going to be done over 3 years to get these rates down and everything. And yes, so you get the tax cuts, and you see the boom that started after Reagan cut taxes because markets work on expectations. That's what they look at. What is going to happen in the future? And then they, you know, change the price of things based on their expectations of the future. When these things
where
actually
are the
happen,
opportunities?
Yes, where are the opportunities? And when these things actually happen, they're already factored into the price. This is what's known in the market as buy the rumor, sell the fact. So if you hear, I hear Iran's going to close the Straits of Hormuz, the price starts going up. Well, the Straits of Hormuz actually haven't been closed, right? But people start buying that. Or I hear that Israel's going to attack Iran or something's going to go on in the oil market and the price of oil starts going up, right? But when those events happen.
Or if I hear that Hostess is going out of business, I go out and buy 2 tons of Twinkies.
Yes, because Twinkies are going away forever. They're not going to be – that recipe and that brand is not going to be sold to another company who will make it instead of Hostess. But people rush out and they bid this stuff up. And then when those events happen, they sell the fact. Oh, that happened. We already factored that into price. So that's no longer a factor in the price because it's already occurred. So what's the next rumor? You know, I hear production's too high or whatever it is. And so prices, taxes, economies, they work off expectations. So the economy starts taking off because there's going to be tax cuts. Well, here's part of the problem. Reagan did raise taxes. And they started coming up in 1992. They started increasing taxes again in 1982
right.
when he was president. And they continued to go up sometime after that, never anywhere near as high as they were under Carter, but they did go up. And you know why that happened? Not because Reagan was like, ha-ha, I ran as an anti-tax president, but I really want to raise taxes on everyone, so I'm going to cut taxes really low and then raise them 11 times as part of my unique new Coke-like classic Coke strategy, right, where I first, anyway, I don't have to get into that analogy, you know what I'm talking about, but
I know what you're
anyway.
Talking about, new Coke, the biggest disaster the Coca-Cola Corporation ever participated in. Look it up.
Exactly. And people were saying, well, I think they did this all along because they wanted to increase sales of classic Coke, you know. So, hey, look, it's Coca-Cola Classic, but I changed to new Coke because, you know, now I'm a tax raiser. Well, no.
It's classic Coke without the sugar, full of HFC now. And you didn't even notice it because we stuck a new Coke in the middle to confuse you. It's the same similar, you know, tactic.
That's exactly what happened. They switched off real sugar and they switched to high fructose corn syrup. And that's why
they got you to like it. That's the thing. See, they give you it's actually, you know what? You brought it up, so let's talk about it. I don't want to lose your train of thought, but it is kind of an Overton window strategy. They basically took the Coca-Cola product, which had been around for a long time. It's delicious, real sugar. And they gave you this new Coke because apparently, you know, you'd have different tastes now. And it sucked so bad that now, oh, well, we made a mistake. We're going back to classic Coke. But the classic Coke they went back to was full of HFC and tastes like shit as opposed to real Coke with sugar. And you clamored for classic Coke because it was less bad than new Coke. And this is the same garbage you've got here. They run Obama, who's so terrible that you'll vote for Romney, who seems less bad. Why don't you vote for something good? Sorry, back to your
Absolutely.
Point.
Absolutely, that's it. And, you know, I got a whole thing on that. Why did they switch to high fructose corn syrup? It's because of the fucking sugar tariffs,
mm-hmm.
which are protecting a bunch of people. It's a government. Yes, exactly. It's the government once again. And once everyone switched to high fructose corn syrup, you could drink a few Cokes, but because it's real sugar, you would get sick after you drank a few. Too many,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Which also helps your body tell you, like, hey, fat ass, quit drinking so many freaking sodas. But
mm-hmm.
with high fructose corn syrup, your body can drink as much fructose as it wants, and your stomach never sends a signal like, hey, maybe you should quit drinking. Like, maybe it's not normal to drink a 24-pack of Coca-Colas, you know?
Mm-hmm.
How much of a sugar high and caffeine high are you on? If you look up, do you see the furniture, or are you still on the floor? But anyway, so this is when obesity rates started taking off as well. but let's not talk
about
that.
It was also when the government reduced what? The you know body type should be you know they
yeah.
they made 38% of America fat overnight by rewriting what overweight was. It's all managed crap. Continue.
Didn't they change the food pyramid and they put Coca-Cola at the top? Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Coca-Cola, Monsanto grains, Cargill
yeah,
products.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to get your food from the four major food corporations as opposed to the four major food groups.
Yeah. Well, so this is actually what happened back in. 1982 is Reagan got fucked by rhinos.
Wait, but Tip O'Neill was not a rhino. He was a Democrat, and he was Speaker of the House.
Yes, he was Speaker of the House.
But you said rhinos.
We had, this goes back to a backgrounder from the Heritage Foundation, which is talking about the budget deal. This actually is a Heritage backgrounder from November 14th of 1983 called the Dole Package. Selling
Dole.
America another
Is that the pineapple
lemon.
People? Is that the pineapple
yeah.
people?
Yeah, but this says something about a lemon, so I don't know what's going on. I thought Dole was pineapples, but apparently Dole, at the time, they were selling lemons, too, so it's very confusing. But I've just put the link in chat for those who want to look at this, but I've highlighted a few things. I'll run through this really quick. It's worth a full read. There's a lot of levels of detail that are kind of interesting, but I'll just hit the high points. Let you know.
And time on text. Time, for those of you who are not in our Blog Talk Radio chat, go ahead to the Tex and Rex Facebook page and you will find the article there as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, back to
okay,
you.
Okay, so it says Congress is locked in yet another rending slugfest over tax increases. In one corner is Senate Finance Committee Chairman Robert Dole, Republican of Kansas, later to be. Future presidential nominee Dole, who ran against Gingrich, or away from Gingrich anyway, who set off the bruising campaign last year that resulted in a $99 billion tax hike. Okay, so there's a tax hike that happened the previous year, already alluded to in this document, of $99 billion. Who started it? Bob Dole. Who is Lawrence O'Donnell blaming for it? Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan didn't want the damn thing. Bob Dole did. Okay, so that package promised $3 in budget cuts for every $1 in tax increases. It turned out to be a lemon. The actual result was 21 cents in spending increases for every $1 in tax hikes. Yet Senator Dole is now back again seeking an additional $75 to $100 billion in tax hikes with the promise of, quote, further spending cuts in the future. Tax hike opponents see many parallels between this new Dole proposal and the 1982 Tax Equity and Fiscal Responsibility Act, otherwise known as TEFRA. For those who lived back then, you got an earful on TEFRA. They see the new package as a rerun of that poor bargain, a real lemon for the American economy. Senator Bob Casten, Republican of Wisconsin, was essentially disappointed, and he asked his colleagues in Congress to deliver on the 1982 bargain of tax cuts before contemplating a new one. But that's not how Congress works. So the Dole budget cuts, upon closer examination, proved to be an illusion. Far from being a genuine trade-off for real tax increases, even the alleged savings amount to substantially less than the tax increases. So here are some examples. Dole has listed $12.4 billion budget cuts in such programs as Medicare, federal pay, and retirement cost of living adjustments, but the Dole package merely duplicates action already underway and thus counts these savings twice. About $8 billion in Dole's cuts assume successful presidential vetoes of congressional spending programs. Congress would be giving the president nothing but graciously granting him permission to take what may be a politically costly step of vetoing spending bills. Okay, so here's $8 billion. Dole and Congress, they're shooting up to the president because they can't get the votes to stop the thing, and they're basically saying, well, you veto them, and then you take the heat for it. And we'll be sitting here in the background quietly off screen, and you go defend this stuff because we sure as hell aren't, much like the John Boehner strategy of today. And then the Dole package includes $10.3 billion in cuts from the Labor Department, Health and Human Services, Housing and Urban Development, Railroad Retirement Funds, and General Revenue Sharing. The $10.3 billion are not real budget cuts, just a trimming of the huge budget hikes contained in the first budget resolution, already $32 billion above the president's budget request. So who's raising all this stuff? Congress is hiking the budget. And then they're saying, well, we'll just trim the rate of growth a little bit. This is classic Republicans. For those of you who have lived with this party forever, this is always what they do. They just trim the rate of growth. There never are any cuts. It's all snake oil. So they're calling this son of Tefra. Congress and the president have been down this road before with the 1982 Tefra tax hike, when the nation swallowed genuine tax increases in return for promised budget cuts that never materialized. Okay, so then we go on and start bringing this thing home. Congress seems determined not to admit that it is the level of government spending, not the deficit, that is the real measure of the government's burden on the economy. Okay, this is what we're talking about today. As Milton Friedman has long argued, a $600 billion government budget combined with $200 billion deficit is much healthier for the economy than $800 billion government budget that is in balance. Substituting taxes for deficits is no cure. So this is not a revenue shortfall. The problem is not a revenue shortfall, but steadily rising spending. Despite White House boasts and despite cries of anguish from big spenders, there have been no cuts in the non-defense budget under President Reagan. The Dole budget cuts and tax increase package is based on a flawed premise that government deficits, rather than the level of government spending, are the problem. Okay, so to go back, Bob Dole was head of the Finance Committee, so he's shooting all the bills out of there. One thing that's very interesting here that I glossed over is that all revenue bills have to originate in the House. So the way they got this stinker through is they amended a House bill that actually came out that was completely on a different topic. So the House passed one bill, and then they amend the thing so that they can pass this thing, even though revenue bills are supposed to originate in the House. But the thing is, what you notice is it's not Reagan that's at the head of this. It's Bob Dole. It's the congressional Republicans that are selling out Republicanism because they're so worried about the deficit that they have to raise taxes on everyone. Meanwhile, raising taxes on everyone hurts growth. You have to grow your way out of this crap. First, what you need to do is start cutting the spending so you're not digging into the hole anymore, right? And then start growing the economy, start bringing in additional government revenue, and then the debt doesn't matter as much. That's acceptable.
Well, Tex, this is precisely the garbage Republicans have been feeding us most of the time, except for brief moments of Reagan, Gingrich, Ron Paul, things like that. They say that they are against, you know, having the debt increase or deficits because it's so terrible, so we've got to have these taxes and all that stuff. Why don't they ever talk about not spending money? You notice
exactly
that?
Absolutely. They never go into this stuff. I'm not going to read this other thing. It has some interesting quotes, but forget it. Okay, so, yeah, they never talk about cutting spending because that's not in their interest, because it's in the interest of people in Congress. Their power comes from the fact that they have all this money to spend. And if you reduce the amount of money being spent, you technically reduce their power. And that's not what they're in the game of doing. They want to be seen bringing home the bacon to their constituents. That's what they view their job as.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is it's bankrupting the nation. But
bankrupted
that's their job.
The nation. Bankrupted the nation. Past tense. They've already done it. That's why they keep raising this debt ceiling crap.
Yeah. And so this stuff continues to this day. So that pretty much deals with his depiction of Reagan. So then it gets back down to Newt Gingrich being a bomb thrower by calling
Bob Dole
the tax collector.
For
the welfare state. Bob Dole is not
brilliant. It's brilliant. Newt is so succinct and so clear and takes a huge point and just hammers it home so clearly and in such a quote, inflammatory way that you can't help but notice it. That is a brilliant line, and he's absolutely right. And that's why Bob Dole went on to lose in 1996.
Bob Dole is not the tax collector for the – well, I am the tax collector for the – stop saying that. But, you know, so then Newt Gingrich, oh, my God, look at this guy. He's out there criticizing the Senate finance leader, who later was, you know, Senate majority leader, Bob Dole, when the Republicans actually got control of the Senate. And here's the guy we picked. Okay, so look, under Reagan back then, you're in 40 years of Democrat control of the House. If you're lucky, maybe every now and then, every once in a blue moon, the Republicans get the Senate, but they don't even get it very much because the congressional majority throughout the Cold War was Democrat, and that was the legacy of Franklin Roosevelt. The presidency
Correct.
Tended to be Republican during that period because Republicans were viewed as better on, you know, the Soviet issue, national defense, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so finally... people are like, hey, we like Reagan, we like that he's cutting taxes and he's fighting up there, but he's getting fucked by these rhinos all over the place. Every time he turns around, there's another rhino giving him a problem. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to go vote for a bunch of new Republicans.
Oh. Did you say what I
Uh-oh.
Think you said? I believe that's rhino fucking right there.
Here they come, look out. Everybody, take cover.
That was charging rhinos fucking right there.
That's exactly what's going on. So then, you know, people went out and voted, party activists, loyalists, people such as ourselves, and we went and we voted and we said, you know what, we're going to deliver the Senate to the Republicans. And then who do they put in charge? They put in charge Bob Dole, the guy who's secretly behind, not secretly, but sitting in Congress undoing what Reagan's doing. And as a result of that, now some, 10, 20, 30 years later, what they're doing is now they're using the fact that the rhinos sold out Reagan to rewrite Reagan now as a rhino, much like they're rewriting the budget deal that Gingrich negotiated when he got his majority in the 1994 election to be all about Clinton and how Gingrich was really the problem and Clinton did all this stuff. Which is not true, because he says that when they did the tax increase deal, so the presidential election was 1992, that's when Bill Clinton got elected with less than 50% of the vote. In fact, I believe he had 42, if I recall correctly.
Yep, between 42 and 43, right there. Yep.
Yep. So he gets elected president kind of by default because George Bush decided that he was going to raise taxes and break his pledge, and everyone was irritated with him, and even Democrats went over and voted for Ross Perot. And so then he came into office and he passed a big stimulus package, which also included a tax hike. And
Wait,
then Lawrence
what?
O'Donnell...
A tax hike and a stimulus? I mean, what is that, like, you know, standard Democrat playbook, first term 101, stimulus, tax increase, nationalized health care? I mean, is this just... Do they have no creativity? That's just the plan that they keep playing? The same play. They all
absolutely. Well, it's kind of frightening to go back and read that heritage document from, you know, 1983 and look at the terms of the debate. It's exactly the same. Nothing has changed. For 30 years, we're fighting this exact same battle over and over and over again. That's
but it's
really
inching in. It's inching in the wrong direction at an ever-increasing pace. Which
yep.
That's the plan, that incrementalism – that gradualism of, you know, well, make it really bad and then pull back a little bit and make it less bad, and they'll accept something less bad that's far worse than it was before we started screwing with it.
Yep.
Wake
and
up,
then,
people. Wake up.
So Clinton enacts his budget plan, which includes these tax increases, because the problem for the Democrats is always people aren't being taxed enough, we have a deficit, and to get out of this recession that we're in, we have to spend more and more, which means we have to borrow more and more, and to pay for our borrowing, because we don't like deficits, we have to raise taxes to fill in the budget gap. This gets back to Milton Friedman saying a $600 billion government budget with, $600 billion in government spending with $200 billion in government borrowing for an $800 billion budget, although not the best thing in the world, is better than a balanced government budget that's spending $800 billion. Cut the freaking budget back down to $600 billion. Quit sucking the money out of the economy because you start getting low economic growth. Guess what happened back in 93 and 94? Why? Ask yourself this. If Lawrence O'Donnell's premise is so right that once we agreed to these tax increases and this, you know, stimulus package, that is what got the economy back on track, which essentially is what he's asserting. Okay, that's a very clever thing. That's what he's asserting, which is total bullshit, because I was graduating from college back then, and the economy sucked ass.
Yep,
okay?
Real estate was
terrible.
There
was a recession. There's a reason that Newt Gingrich was able to rally the Republicans and get elected Speaker of the House, be a Republican Speaker of the House for the first time in almost 50 years. It's because the economy was terrible under Clinton, the first 2 years of Clinton. And he enacted that, you know, his
But that was George Bush's fault.
Yeah, exactly. That was George Bush's fault. He enacted that great budget deal in 93 because he got elected in 92. You wait till January, you get sworn in the next year, which was 93. He enacts the budget deal, and the economy tanks for 2 years.
Yep.
Then
the Omnibus
comes
Budget
in,
Reconciliation
they,
Act of 1996. Why are these things always called the Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act of this year that we're going to screw you? Why are they always an omnibus? Why can't they just like do tax policy in one bill, budget in another bill, war appropriations in another bill? I mean, why is everything an omnibus where we got 40,000 pages of crap and we, you know, screw you 10 ways to Sunday and you can't even read the damn thing?
Well, it's because they can't agree on anything, so they have to throw it in, and then they guarantee that no matter what it is, it's complete crap. It's like orange-flavored ice cream with toothpaste in it. Hey, yeah. We agreed on something. This sucks. Why are we eating this? You know, but that's Congress. You know?
And they had the audacity to reduce business meals and entertainment deductions for businesses, which are typically for smaller businesses, while they are throwing lavish parties at the taxpayers' expense. I mean, it's the hypocrisy is just unbelievable.
Yeah, and they keep doing it. And the worst part is they engage in what enables this stuff. Well, what enables this stuff is an uninformed citizenry that just sits around and listens and, you know, whatever Bill O'Reilly says they do, whatever, you know, Karl Rove says they do. That's the problem.
Turn
and
off
your
television. Shoot
and
the
then
TV.
You go back, yeah, shoot the TV. And then when you go back and you try to remember this stuff and how it all played out, because you lived it, you were there, you have the memory thieves coming in, rewriting history, like whoever just put the words in Lawrence O'Donnell's mouth with this piece that he wrote that is completely fucking wrong.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
He's right that Gingrichism is the most influential thing in
the
politics
last 30 years.
For the last 30 years, partly because Gingrich is the inheritor of what Reagan was trying to do. Reagan said the government's too big, it needs to slow down its growth, we need to reduce taxes, and he went and he enacted a program of doing that. And then he got screwed by all the rhinos in Congress, and the media was all over him and all this kind of stuff. And so, yes, he did raise taxes after that, but it never went up as high as it did before. Gingrich came in, took the mantle, and as Nancy Reagan said, Gingrich has inherited the mantle from Ronald Reagan, and look at how the party treats the guy with the mantle of Ronald Reagan, who went in and actually balanced the budget. They don't even give him credit for doing that.
Yep.
They don't even recognize him for doing that. They want him gone because he did that. Because when Reagan was there first, they didn't want Reagan either. They were trying to screw him over with their rhino du jour at the time, which was George H.W. Bush.
Voodoo and economics, then, 1,000 yeah. points of light, wouldn't be prudent. Sorry.
And the only reason Reagan got in, he's like, all right, I'll make, you know, George H.W. Bush, he'll be my vice president. And they thought, good, that'll set us up to win, you know, whenever this guy's done. And actually,
which
that
was
worked.
Supposedly I mean, March, almost March of that year.
Yes, that almost actually happened. But they didn't want this guy around. And then they made sure all behind the scenes they're working against Ronald Reagan every single freaking day to undermine what he's trying to do. And then finally, Bush gets in there, and he starts at the presidential level undermining everything that Reagan did. And Gingrich's like, this is bullshit. This party doesn't believe any of this crap. This party just says it believes it and then actively works against it. This is why the party has been in the minority forever. We have to stand up for what we actually believe in, and we have to go have these fights over these issues, and the people will rally around us and we'll win a victory. And that's what he did in 94. That's why Newt Gingrich is who he is today, and that's why the voters and the people respect him and what he did and his legacy. And that's why nobody gives a shit about Mitt Romney or anything he ever did.
Exactly.
Nor will they ever.
But that's precisely why. Who? The Crypt Keeper? But that's precisely why they not only have to silence Gingrich, but they have to expunge his record. It has to be removed and stricken from our memories or tainted with, you know, the personal life allegations. And, you know, like, hey, I got to say, this is an important point also. Because, you know, you and I are also Ron Paul supporters. Granted, in this race, we wanted Newt Gingrich because
whoever
he's got
can lead
an effective
us out of the
record.
Darkness and into the light.
Exactly. You know, and I've been reading Ron Paul for nearly two decades. Big props to Ron Paul. He's one of my favorite. But
I was
some
fighting
in
Bush
the
administration officials over Ron Paul.
Exactly. But some in the Ron Paul movement have been fed this image of Newt Gingrich, that he is part of the establishment, neocon, NWO elite, okay? Now, granted, there is some neocon aspects to Newt Gingrich, predominantly his foreign policy, and I don't agree with his foreign policy 100%, but by the same token, I don't agree with Ron Paul's foreign policy 100% either. However, for the most part, the only one who has done conservative things consistently and effectively, not just talked about them in rhetoric and undermined them or talked about them in principle but wasn't able to carry them through, but the only one in the last 30 years who's consistently and effectively talked conservative and done conservative things is Newt Gingrich. And that's the kind of speaker that we need, not this loser, John Boehner. Text will
speaker
continue
or
this conversation.
President, whichever job we can get him in.
Well, exactly. Maybe speaker and then president. You know, we could do that. It's the top of the hour, so let's just take a little housekeeping break. Call-in number is 646-649-1013. Again, 646-649-1013. You would like to join the conversation, and I would also encourage all of you to, if you're not on Twitter, get on Twitter. If you're on Twitter, start tweeting these articles, these links, these videos with hashtag FireBoehner. That's the hashtag that is we're trying to get trending to get rid of this guy, put pressure on there. Tweet your congressman. Tweet other prominent congressmen. You know, I tweet John Boehner himself and tell him to do the honorable thing and stand down. So put the pressure on, mount up, and make people aware. Call your congressman because you're his constituent. So call your congressman. And also find other congressmen that you can call so that we can let them know, because the fact is, if we can get 16 or 17 Republicans to either vote present or vote for someone other than John Boehner on January 3rd, this guy will not be the next Speaker of the House, and we will have a floor fight for Speaker that we were robbed of in Tampa for President. So put the pressure on. And if you're so inclined, call John Boehner. You know, that'd be kind of fun. Just call him at his office. Oh, back to you, Ted.
Mr. Speaker, time to step down. That sucks. So he's still around, John Boehner. And he's got an election coming up on January 3rd. They're going to announce this deal before Christmas when no one's paying attention. The election to reelect him as Speaker or to stop him being reelected as Speaker is selected January 3rd, because most people are still going to be on vacation then. Mm-hmm. And presumably he thinks he's going to be getting glowing press coverage of the success of the budget deal. That's why all this stuff is happening when it is.
Yep.
So well, you got to shut this guy down.
Mm-hmm. Look, the deal's done. Okay, now it's just a matter of what's going through. And I don't think the issue so much is what's the deal, okay, because the fact is that they're going to spend a boatload of money. They're going to increase taxes, whether it's through elimination or limitation of deductions or through the increase of rates or some combination thereof. It's and even if they manage to make a good deal on this fiscal cliff thing, okay, they're still going to screw you with Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act taxes. And according to Judge Roberts, that bill is a tax. So we're getting screwed with taxes on January 1st, come hell or high water. The issue is, how are they going to roll out this, quote, deal? And then how is the media going to spin it to make us think that it's good? And how Obama will spin it that, you know, he did the best he could, but the obstructionist House wasn't giving him concessions because, you know, all John Boehner and Paul Ryan are interested in is helping out the rich. And then the Republicans will say, we tried to get a better deal for the free markets and for constitutional governance and to balance budgets, but Obama is such a scary, frightening socialist, we couldn't get further. That's the narrative you're going to get. Don't buy it. It's not true. They've already made the deal. They're rolling it out to you. The agenda is to fleece you and grow the government, and the only way you shrink it is to stop spending, reform the monetary system, end the Fed, and frankly, end the illegal taxation and invasion of your privacy. Income taxation. It is illegal. We need some other kind of tax system that is fair, balanced, and indirect.
Well, and if we don't get this party reformed, I mean, we might as well just pack it up, you know, because it's done. This is part of, you know, the problem with the Ron Paul movement has been having is that there have been in the party, but the party mainstream has never viewed them as a legitimate part of the party. Just, oh, well, those are libertarians who happen to vote for us. You know, it's good to have them here and to have their vote, but, you know, we won't really be doing anything that they actually want. Well, their numbers are growing and swelling, and the number of people who actually identify publicly as Republican is shrinking. And the reason is because the Republican Party claims to believe these things, and they don't do them. So now it is time for the Ron Paul movement, the Liberty movement, and conservatives to take over the party from the Rhino wing that has wrested control of the party away from us ever since, I would argue, 1998 when they got rid of Gingrich. And they went on a big old spending spree, and they got Dennis Hastert, who apparently was in the pocket of Tom DeLay the whole time, or at least that was the rumor. But, you know, John Boehner is in the mold of Robert Mitchell, who was Republican, what was it, 18th District, Illinois, and he was the House Minority Leader of the Republicans during the Reagan era, and he was another Gerald Ford, you know, he was another John Boehner, one of these go-along-to-get-along Republicans who viewed, you know, congeniality and being best buds and hanging out with all the Democrat leaders. Yeah, playing golf. That's the most important thing. Let's get back to congeniality here. Let's not actually fight ideological battles. Let's just put the whole government in neutral and, you know, stage these political rhetorical battles and then, you know, laugh about it over a few drinks afterwards.
You know, Tex, you just made me think of something that Newt Gingrich said. If I can find it, it was a quote he said about
I know it would have
behavior.
Been good.
About behavior, you know, how you behave in Congress and how the general Republican sentiment is, you know, about congeniality and nicety and, you know, sort of like with John Boehner when he says stuff like, you know, let's go play golf, let's do it on the golf course or whatever the hell he said. And Newt had this great quote, and I actually have it on our page. It is right under the graphic that says, this is a daily fact, by the way, and I got this from one of our avid listeners. Thanks, Diane. People who use a lot of swear words tend to be more honest and trustworthy, human behavioral studies suggest. And right under that, I put this quote from Gingrich, who says, I think one of the great problems we have in the Republican Party is that we don't encourage you to be nasty. We encourage you to be neat, obedient, loyal, and faithful, and all those Boy Scout words, which would be great around a campfire, but are lousy in politics. Get in the pit!
Absolutely.
Boehner, you friggin' sissy. Get in the pit. You've got the money. You've got the purse strings. Obama is a weak community organizer, moderate basketball player who likes to take $14 million vacations at our expense. You can put him in a box. You can box him in. You can tie up his hands. You can take away his money. You can crush his agenda. But you won't do it. So stand down, sir. Your days are over. Stand down.
Absolutely. I mean, look, it was Tip Tip O'Neill who said, you know, politics ain't beanbag, you know. And Tip O'Neill was a very powerful Speaker of the House that Reagan had to deal with. That's how these 11 tax increases came about, because Reagan's dealing with Tip O'Neill and the Surrender Caucus in the Republican Party in Congress at the time. And who got rid of Tip O'Neill?
Newt Gingrich got rid
of Tip O'Neill. I mean, how effective is this guy? He is our number one ace in the hole, MVP, running for 20 freaking years until the Rhinos managed to, you know, get rid of him, vote him out as Speaker, and then he said, okay, well, you know, screw you. Because he's been fighting with those guys forever. Here's something that Gingrich said about Bob Dole. This was said in 1982. This was talking about those same budget deals that Bob Dole was brokering with the Democrats and foisting on Ronald Reagan against his will, which now they're trying to tar and feather Reagan with as if he was supporting these things. So he said, let me just say that in the Senate Finance Committee report, page 414 and 415, it says over 5 years it will raise $228 billion. I think that is clearly, though, would be the largest tax increase in a recession since Herbert Hoover in 1931 and 1932. I think it's a terrible thing to do. I think it will make the economy sicker. And I think to raise taxes without first having gotten every dime of spending cut is fundamentally not conservative.
Yep.
Gingrich was
Herbert
calls
Hoover.
It like he sees it. Yeah.
Yep. Hoover was one of the first rhinos. Hoover was one of the first rhinos.
Yes.
He called out the rhinos of the past. He's calling out the rhinos of his time. He's calling out the rhinos now. And by the way, the person who gave you that answer that it was Newt, that was not me. That was none other than Trog. Chris Shipler from Facebook's Coalition of Freedom. Hey, Chris, how are you?
Gentlemen, good.
Hey, how's it going? Good to have you in our company.
Yeah. This is a great topic. And you saw me typing away there at all the other things that Newt did besides just establish, you know, the Republicans don't raise taxes mentality. You know, he did so much more that nobody gives him credit for. I actually posted that C-SPAN documentary from, I think it was 99, that was done on him. Everybody needs to watch that. Everybody. Because it helps you understand what was going on in the time. Newt goes back into the early era, you know, when he was a freshman, the things he did, why he did what he did, the corruption he went after. He talks about how weak the Republicans were, how settled in they were to being, you know, the lower tier party, how they set in motion a whole educational platform across the country to raise up new young leaders for the party. I mean,
Conservative Opportunity Society.
I remember when I watched that C-SPAN documentary on him for the first time, because they don't pull any punches on him either. You know, they've got Newt in there with one guy interviewing, and then a couple people on the outside that knew him. You know, so there was some, you know, I don't want to say conflict, but some, you know, interaction going on, you know, from different perspectives. But he did amazing things. You know, C-SPAN exists because of Newt Gingrich, because he opened the doors in the chambers and said, I'm bringing the news in. I want the American people to see what goes on, you know, with the politicians who are making decisions for us behind closed doors. He busted that open. He was in the news all the time. He called news conferences. It was unheard of for a House speaker to go out and do the things he did. You know, he did all kinds of unprecedented things. And there's something that a lot of people don't understand, I think, is so was so frustrating to me when I was battling for Newt, was, you know, they brought up all the ethics charges, you know, the 86 ethics charges. Well, he beat them all. And the one that he paid the $300,000 fine for was not a fine. He was paying back the charges for that investigation because his lawyer provided incorrect information, and Newt felt for the good of the party that he had to cough up $300,000. Now, you know what $300,000 was in those days? That was a lot of money. And then he ends up, that last ethic charge ends up being thrown out by the IRS saying he didn't do anything wrong. Here's something that's people right. to understand. The year before that and the year before that, they had filed 100 additional ethics charges against him, trying to destroy him. 186 ethics charges. He beat every one of them, still enacted most of the contract with America, still revolutionized the party, brought it to power. And then guess who was one of the people who turned on him and tried to destroy him?
John Frying Pan Boehner.
Boehner. Yep. And I'll tell you, when I look at the state of this party and the people that are in power right now, and these people who are doing this debt ceiling, you know, fiscal cliff bull crap, you know, and what they did in the last 2 years or didn't do, you know, to stop Obama, and you know, Newt's great article that he wrote on all the power they had, you know, that they could have stopped Obama on multiple occasions with different, you know, whether it was appropriations or whatever, whatever. But when you look at that and you look at the people that are in power, these are the same people who were part of the Bush era that gave us a full House and Senate control from the Democrats and ultimately gave us Obama. It's the same people. People need to understand this because this is what has to change in this country. I don't care if it's, you know, Constitution Party, Libertarian Party, Republicans, whatever the conversation is. In 2014, all of the House of Representatives come up for re-election. And 33 senators come up for election. It is a chance for us to clean out the corruption. Forget the right-left paradigm. Clean out that era, because that era is, there's something wrong with those people. I don't know what it is. The more I study them, the sicker I get in my heart, because I cannot fathom that people that call themselves conservatives and Republicans can support these people because they're wrong for this country. Forget the parties. Sorry, I got on a roll.
No, that was good.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, see, they're so much smarter than you, and they know so much more. That the $1.6 trillion deficit, I mean, Milton Friedman, they were talking about the government budget back then was $600 billion. The deficit was $200 billion. We have a $1.6 trillion deficit now, you know? And here, that Lawrence O'Donnell in that piece, he's talking about how Bill Clinton, and because he did this, he was able to, you know, balance the budget because of his stupid, you know, stimulus package and tax increases, which all it did was cause a recession in the economy, slowed growth. We all lived through it back then, and it's doing the same damn thing now. And look, it didn't even work, because when you got to Obama, he did the exact same plan, and look at what the deficit is now. Look at what the freaking thing is now. Look at what government spending is now. It's just getting worse and worse and worse every single year, and it's dragging the economy down with it. I mean, right now, we're essentially having unemployment levels that are equivalent to what we had in the Great Depression. You know, you don't see bread lines because everyone who's on food stamps has a credit card now for food stamps. So they go shop at the same place you do, and you don't notice that they charged it.
It's the And the thing about the bread lines is that you actually wait in line for bread and soup. With the food stamps, you can buy all sorts of stuff like lobster, caviar, T-bones. In fact, I heard this one where a woman went to buy dog food on food stamps, and they told her, well, you know, food stamps are not for pets, so that's ineligible. So she said, okay, she took the dog food back and went and bought T-bone steaks for the dog. That's okay. So not only do you not see the bread lines because of the food stamps, but what's being spent is not the sustenance level that people who are unemployed need for food. It is nothing more than another program of wealth transfer under the pretext of social welfare to the corporations, the grocery stores, Monsanto, and all the food producers of this genetically modified corporate high fructose corn syrup crap that we call food in this country these days. And you're falling for it. You're a corporatist slave, and you're willingly embracing it under the pretext of sentimentality. And it's got to stop. We cannot spend money we don't have. We are mortgaging our children's children, okay? And every time these bastards start talking about spending cuts or balancing budgets or this or that or the other, it's always over a 10-year period. Now, 10-year period, what the, why 10 years? So, you know who else came up with bullshit plans like that, 5-year plans and 10-year plans? The Soviets. The Soviet Union did that. You know, the Great Leap Forward with Mao, the Chinese did that. It fails every time. 10 years.
You know why?
A presidential term is 4 years. A senator's term is 6 years. And a congressman's term is 2 years. Why are you taking these things out over 10 years when you are probably not even going to be the same assholes that are there to deal with the blow-up of
and
this thing?
80% of the cuts always come in like year 8, 9, and 10. Oh, yeah, we get the balance because in year 8, 9, and 10, we're going to have all these great cuts. Well, yeah, it's a completely different group of people, and you guys, you know, you're gone, you know? You're in a nursing home at that point. You're not around when all this stuff happens. That's the problem. You know, and look, remember the budget battle in 2011 where John Boehner forced all these horrible tax or spending cuts on the government? It was the worst thing ever, and he was going to destroy the economy because they need that government spending. He got $25 billion worth of cuts in that fiscal year. I mean, that's it, $25 billion. Forget it. That's like 5 minutes worth of government spending. It's probably a minute. You know, and they act like it's the end of the world. But Boehner, you know, expands the numbers out 10 years as if it's this big amount when it isn't.
It's a crime.
Well, the other thing that people, you know, have to continually be reminded of is cuts are not cuts. They're cuts in growth 99.99% of the time. So it means nothing. What is it, an 8% built-in? I'm sorry if I don't remember the exact percentage. A built-in automatic growth factor in government. What is it, Rex?
I don't know if it's 8%, but I think it depends on the program. But it always goes back to this, you know, this crap where we've got, we've talked about it before. Tex has done a really good piece on it. Just check out our archives and follow the show. You know, where they have discretionary and non-discretionary spending. And discretionary is the smaller part of spending. Well, I mean, let's think about this, right? They say, well, we can't do anything about this other stuff. It's already mandatory, and these increases are in there, and, you know, the Social Security program and all this stuff, it's all in there. Like, nothing's in there. Nothing is in there at all because you're Congress. You have the purse strings. You can vote for bills. Revenue bills originate in the House. You can cut any spending. And the simple fact is, you know, we're pussyfooting around what we cut, what we don't cut. Sometimes I think to myself, I hope that they really actually can't pull this deal out of their ass and that we go off this fiscal cliff, because I would like to see something cut for once.
Well, you know,
cut it.
You know why they can't cut it? This always comes up. They never have, Social Security is the third rail of politics. You can't talk about that. It's because you can't cut it in the absence of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. Newt Gingrich was able to provide leadership to cut welfare programs, to turn welfare into workfare, and to get a powerful, charismatic president, Bill Clinton, to go along with it because he was providing leadership, and he was a good communicator. He had an excellent communication strategy all throughout the first 100 days of Gingrich's speakership. Every day, Gingrich was in the press, on the media, talking about what was going on. They were being very clear about what the budget battles were. They were talking specifically about what bills the Democrats were proposing, which ones were realistic, which ones were crap, because, you know, Gingrich is looking for allies on the other side of the aisle so that he could have bipartisan bills. But who are the serious people, the conservative Democrats that I can work with, and who are the jokers, and calling them out, naming names. And in the process, informing you, the voter, so you knew exactly what was going on. And when you put Gingrich in there and he said, I'm going to do this Contract with America thing, you had a scorecard. You knew exactly what was going on in his Congress. I mean, he even got people interested in things. Remember this, where Congress people would say, they would go out on the floor and they would say, there's a bill before Congress that's been wrapped up in committee for 10 years or whatever. And it's a great bill, and I wish that the committee would bring it to the floor so that we could vote on this thing, darn it, because I really want it. Well, the fact of the matter is they used to hide the signatures. That wasn't public record. The congressman who was out there saying he really wanted the bill, he would not have signed on to the bill to bring it to the floor. So the very people pretending that they were advocating for the bill were not supporters of it. And I forget what that was actually called, but there was a big deal about it. And I remember Rush Limbaugh got involved in this thing. So there's, you know, kind of conservative press. And Republican voters got involved, and they started calling Congress about it, and they changed that rule so that whether or not a congressman had signed on to it or not became public knowledge, and then people could see all these people who had been lying to them. Well, that's never good to lie to your voters. But that's a very, very specific and wonkish thing for the average voter to be, to A, even know exists, and then get involved in. But it was all because Gingrich had a great communication strategy. And John Boehner doesn't. Right now, nobody knows what in the hell Barack Obama and John Boehner are talking about. Nobody. I mean, even the media, if they don't know, you think they'd report it, but they're not reporting it because I don't think they really know.
It's golf.
Yeah, it's golf.
Yeah, exactly. It's garbage because, look, the simple fact is this deal was done before Romney handed the presidency to Obama. It was already done. And we know this from the fact because, you know, they worked it out. And then, you know, John Boehner's great communication and great leadership skills, he comes out and, you know, he says that, you know, he's going to be the tough conservative by doing this.
Mr. President, this is your moment. We're ready to be led.
I mean,
yeah, see, that's great leadership right there, Boehner. I mean, basically, he said, hey, don't look to me.
It's frightening.
Hey, you people in the House are looking to stand up to the president. Don't look over here. I'm not here. You know, John Boehner reporting to work. I'm just going to head in the office, shut the door. You know, good luck out there.
Yep. All right, we've got a caller on the line. Telephone number 202-225-0600. That is the Capitol. That is actually H-232. Oh, that's John Boehner's office. All right, well, actually, let me read that number out to you again in case you're inclined to call him. 202-225-0600. Call him up and tell him to quit, but we've got him on the line. Mr. Speaker, you are live with Tex and Rex and Trog. And we're talking Johnny, calm down. No, Johnny, there's no need to cry, okay? Yes, I know we're being hard on you, but the simple fact is that you've got the power. Newt Gingrich laid it out for you, and all you've got to do is put Obama in his place. And look, I can't take it. Calm yourself down and call back in. Unbelievable, that guy. I mean, he cries at the drop of a hat, and he can't get a point across.
Have you ever heard that man speak more than 20 words in a row?
Yes, but then he begins to repeat himself.
Not without
not
taking
serious.
A shot.
The president's not serious. He knows all the details of these negotiations. He doesn't tell anyone. And, you know, as Gingrich was saying, he could mobilize all the Republicans in the House and go back to their home districts and be talking to radio stations in their home districts, television stations in their home districts, to be communicating with the voters out there to let them know what's going on and how the Republican Party is going to, you know, stand up for conservative principles and make sure that we enact a bill that is in keeping with what we believe, and this is our strategy for doing it, and we need your help. You, the voter, get out there and get involved. That's like how a political party actually should operate, and that's how a successful one does. But yeah. John Boehner doesn't run a successful political party. He runs a political party that is in its last days and heading into oblivion because he's demoralized the base and the party leadership gave the Republican Party base that was really excited about getting a victory in 2012, handed them a Kraft sandwich with a smile. But really, Alan West was just being nice there. It's a shit sandwich with a smile that they were giving us in Mitt Romney and basically leadership by rhinos.
Well,
and what we wanted was conservatism.
And it's worse than that, Tex, because, I mean, look, if these guys were merely incompetent, you know, we just get rid of them and bring in some real conservatives. But the fact is that these guys are mimicking the Democrats to such a high degree that the Republican Party is now, as you pointed out about the Democrats in the past, it is a criminal organization masquerading as a political party. They have marginalized the grassroots. They have crapped on the future of the party, which is the young, liberty-minded constitutional revolution inspired by Ron Paul. They have removed Michael Steele, not Michael Steele, John Douchebag spokesman, but the real Michael Steele, S-T-E-E-L-E, for winning elections. And then they put little Prince Pubic in place, who lost elections, and apparently Prince Pubic is running for chairman of the RNC again. So in addition to firing Boehner, you have got to get rid of little Rincey Pubis as chairman of the RNC because he cost you seats, he cost you the presidency, and he did it because he and John Sununu and John Boehner and all these other losers are criminals who won't let the grassroots speak, who don't want to be conservatives. They merely want to pander to conservatism, and they want to run a corporatist party that goes in lockstep with the Democrats and gives you this false impression that somehow you have a choice. Put an end to these people. Remove them from office. You have the power. The fact is that when you're sitting back and watching Dancing with the Stars, trying to stab each other to get the next deal on the plasma screen or the new cell phone or whatever other garbage you don't need, you're not paying attention to what's happening. Why? Because the election's over. I don't have to worry about it for 4 years. Well, that's the problem. Now, obviously, if you're listening to this show, you're not. That doesn't fit you. But you know people like that. And I hate to do this to you because, yes, it's their fault, but it's your responsibility. Why? You're listening. You're involved and you're active and you're awake and you know the bullshit. You have to get these other people on board. Now, don't go out there and beat the crap out of them. You need to do it in a pleasant way, in a loving way, especially if it's a coworker or someone at church or someone in your neighborhood, you know. But you've got to get them involved, and you've got to tell them what's going on, because the simple fact is we are running out of time. And the reason that we're talking about this now is because the vote for Speaker is on January 3rd. This is the guy that manages the House where the money is spent. You're all out there freaking out and scared shitless of Barack Obama. Barack Obama is a non-issue other than if he wants to indefinitely detain you or put you on his drone kill list, which sucks, but there's pretty much nothing you can do about that. But as far as taxes, the economy, and policy, Barack Obama is nothing. He is nothing unless the Speaker of the House hands it to him. The problem is John Boehner, and getting rid of John Boehner is absolutely important. And don't fall for this bullshit lie, just like they're trying to feed you Jeb Bush to run in 2016 because he's so much more conservative than Mitt Romney. Don't fall for this. If we get rid of John Boehner, we can have Paul Ryan, or we can have Eric Cantor, or we can have Kevin McCarthy. No more rhinos.
I think it's Eric Cantor's turn to be Speaker of the House, though, and that's how the Republican Party operates. Whose turn is it now? Not whether they're any good or whether they actually care about what the Republican Party claims to believe in. It's just, this guy just happens to be standing here. He's the next warm body in line, so let's pick him. And this George Bush thing, I mean, my God, they're like, conservative favorite Jeb Bush, you know. We've already had two Bushes, and they were not very conservative at all. In fact, both of them did great damage to the Republican Party's brand. I would argue that the Bushes are the anti-brand. And so what are we going to do, pick Jeb Bush to, you know, lay the final blow to the Republican Party? And their other creatures that are coming up are Paul Ryan and Marco Rubio. More rhinos. More and more rhinos. Don't let them do it. Because, look, the conservatives are going to be coming up. We're going to have candidates that are really good. And these guys, they're going to be trying to plink them left and right, get them out of their seats. You cannot let them do this. And in the meantime, they're going to have their Wonder Boys, their you know, rhino Wonder Boys that they're going to be running on the media and all this wonderful stuff and getting all this glowing press. And they'll be on the left-wing media getting all this glowing press and everything because they're setups to sell you out once they get in whatever office they get.
Yep. Can I run some information off that people need to know about for Priebus?
Please go. As long as we can get rid of Prince Pubic, we're happy. I mean, look, the only thing I will say is that his penthouse suite in Tampa, that was the one good thing that he did because, I mean, those were some good cigars. Yeah. We drank all his liquor. I mean, we had a good time in his place. But other than that, this guy is absolutely horrible.
Well, I just want to say to the listeners before we turn it over to Chris – if you ever meet Priebus in person, you know, and I would try to find a function that he's at so I could stand up and raise my hand and complain about the Republican Party and how much it sucks nowadays, thanks to him. But what you're going to try to do is trick him into saying his name backwards, because then he gets sucked back into the magic puzzle box from which he came from.
I remember that article. Oh, God. Well, the thing, I'm scrolling down. I get so many stupid posts, you know, and I unpinned that one on the Priebus information on, you know, somewhere in January, the chairmanship comes up for reelection, and he thinks he has it in the bag. And there's 168 voting members that vote for the chairman. And those are your state representatives. So people in your individual states need to get a hold of your state chair, your state national chair. Any of those top three people in the state are the people who actually vote for the RNC chair. So you got to get a hold of these people and say, hey, you ain't going to get no money. You ain't going to get – we're not going to vote for your rhinos. And if you vote this guy back in, you guys are in worse trouble than you already are in. And so it's going to take – this is one of those things where, you know, I know it's the holidays, but you want this guy running the RNC? You've seen what he's done. He needs to go. You know, I have no idea how he got voted in. I actually looked at the – typically there's 5, 6, 7, 8 votes, you know, cycles that they go through before somebody – they have to get 85 votes in order to win, and it's a real – dog and pony show. You can just by watching the vote totals. I've looked at it for the last 4 or 5 RNC election cycles. Mm-hmm. So that's something where, you know, you've got to put your foot down. Now, I don't know, you know, there's several states that are supposed to be controlled by the Paul movement, and I'm sure they ain't going to vote for him. But, you know, it's one of those things where people got to pick up the phone, they got to email, they got to, you know, reach out to your individual states and say, no Priebus, period, end of report. Do not vote for this man. You will pay.
That's right.
Okay, no, that was my input.
No, that's great. And then, you Absolutely. Know, there's always the question of, you know, well, then who will we get? Well, look, it doesn't matter who you want to get. All right, I mean, you know, let's face it. This is a vote that occurs within the House, okay? We know that every single Democrat is going to vote for Nazi Pelosi, okay? So that's a given. And we know that most of the, you know, Republicans are going to go along with, you know, John Boehner. But we know of at least 4, I would say 5 if you include Gohmert, who are not going to vote for this guy. Representative Gohmert from Texas nominated Speaker Newt Gingrich for the office. No one seconded it, but he did do that. So you got that. Then you got the 4 guys who Boehner, on McCarthy's scorecard list, purged from their committee positions because they did not go along to get along in the party and actually voted on principle. So we got Amash, Hulskamp, Jones, and Schweikert, and Gohmert. So call their offices and encourage them, and then maybe inquire in their offices who else you should call to let them know that you don't want Boehner. I'm sure they know. They're there. So get involved and make the calls, because they need to hear from you, because ultimately all of these losers know that their job hinges upon your vote, and that vote hinges upon your perception of who they are. And they think that with the media and with the speeches and the other bullshit and the money they get from the RNC for towing the line, they can convince you to reelect them, okay? But if you let them know that you're that pissed about it, and if they vote for Boehner, you're not going to reelect them, they're going to get a little worried. And all of these guys, even though they're super insulated, they're becoming aware of the fact that there is dissension in the grassroots with what they've been doing. So they're a little scared. So put that pressure on. Mount up.
Mm-hmm.
Let them know, okay, because this guy's got to go. He's just got to go.
Well, the other thing, the other reason you want to call and get involved in this process is, yes, okay, so at the House level, there are several people. At any given time, there's always somebody who someday would like to be Speaker of the House, right? So, you know, there's talk of a challenger, but, well, he's too strong, so I don't want to do anything. And the leadership comes to them and says, hey, you better not challenge Boehner, because we're going to come after your committee assignments, or we're going to come after this, that, or the other. And all these terrible things are going to happen to you, and we're not going to, you know, approve various pork barrel spending for your district. And so these people get threatened. And, you know, worst come to worst, we're going to run someone against you in your home district, and we're going to fund them and not fund you. Or if you're in a close election, you get no funds from the party. You are completely on your own. Ask Michelle Bachmann about that, because that's what Boehner did to her.
Yep.
But if they hear from the grassroots that there's all this support and dissatisfaction with Boehner, it emboldens the opposition. And it lets the people in charge know that, holy crap, we're screwing up, so that even if they do manage to win or squeak out a victory, they are aware that they're on notice and that people are paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to get involved. You got to let them know.
I think there's something that's – sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Rob.
I think there's something that's really important to be said at this point in time politically, is that they use fear to shove Romney down our throats. And they use fear of Obama, you know, and did nothing in the House they could have done to build up this dynamics that was so ugly. You know, instead of doing their damn job, they did nothing. They let Obama run free for the last 2 years. And here's important. They can't do any worse. They have destroyed the party. They're all the top leadership, all these old Bush-era corrupt rhinos, you know, are in control. They're selling your country down the drain. There ain't nothing else to be afraid of. All you have now is to act. You know, what are you afraid of? It's already crap. Obama's in his second term. You know, Boehner's going to hand, you know, Obama anything he wants. I mean, we could totally control what goes on in the next four. And I wouldn't say totally control, because you got the czars and you got, you know, executive, you know, orders and things like that. But we have tremendous amount of power in that House. And the thing is it can't get any worse. So you might as well just act. We need to get rid of Priebus. We need to get rid of Boehner. And we need to empower these Tea Party people, because here's something important. These guys got voted in 2010 in this great wave to go in and change Congress and fix our country. And they've been held down, not by Democrats, by Republicans. And so they're there, many of them, the ones that haven't been co-opted or the fake ones like Rubio, who came in on that wave, they still want to do a job. You know, so they need to know that the people are behind them. So anyway, I just want to throw that out there.
No, absolutely. And reach out if you're supporting Newt or Ron Paul for the brokered convention, and you were getting flack from all the former supporters of real conservatives who jumped ship and went Romney. Reach out to them, because all of them said that after the election, you know, hopefully for, you know, their perspective, Romney would have won. Well, he didn't. That they would then hold his feet and the Congress's feet to the fire. Well, I would argue that most of them honestly meant that. Okay, they were just so afraid of Obama that they jumped on Romney. I don't know why they attacked us instead of going after the enemy, but that's besides the point. Bury the hatchet. Reach out to them and say, okay, let's work together. Let's get rid of Boehner. Let's get rid of Priebus. You know, let's forget this whole Romney thing. That's a non-issue. Romney, who's Romney? Nobody even knows who Romney is anymore. He's gone. Okay? So let's focus on the real issue. Obama's president. That's the reality. John Boehner's going to hand him everything that he wants. That's the reality. John Boehner does not have to be Speaker of the House come January 3rd. That's a huge, real possibility. You can have Speaker Newt Gingrich. You can have somebody else. I mean, it would be a great ironic turn to have, you know, Amash or Holzkamp or Schweikert as Speaker. That would be fantastic. I've also heard that J.C. Watts is interested in being the chair of the party. Now, Watts is a good guy. He's a real conservative. He stood behind Newt. He would certainly do a far better job than little Prince Pubic. I mean, look at what Michael Steele managed to do when he was chairman, because he's really conservative. With the primary that we had, the shot at a brokered convention wouldn't have even been possible if it wasn't for Michael Steele. So let's really focus on who's really doing the work, who's really representing your interests. Go ahead.
This is one of the reasons why who ends up being the chairman of the RNC is so important, because Michael Steele was able to set up primary process that favored small states so that small candidates that didn't have a lot of money or good candidates that were not well-funded by Wall Street, like Mitt Romney, would not be able to steamroll everyone into voting for that juggernaut. And then Mitt Romney and Governor Perry screwed that up because they had a lot of money, and so they moved up Florida so that they could essentially bankrupt the other campaign. That was the idea. And unfortunately, they were successful this time. They were fairly successful in Florida. I think Romney beat Gingrich by, I don't know, something like 2.5, 3%.
Barely.
Yeah. It was a squeaker. But the problem was the media campaign kicked in with Karl Rove, who, by the way, was behind a lot of that money that was pouring into Florida, goes and announces that, well, now Rick Santorum is the flavor of the month. What? No, he's not. But everyone went and believed it. Look at all the support that Santorum got in all these southern states because the media was telling them to vote for that jerk. Santorum never had a chance at all. That's why Karl Rove chose him. Where the hell is Rick Santorum today? Nobody sees him. Nobody wants to see him. Nobody wants to hear from him. He's terrible. The whole point was to pick an opposition that had no choice so that nobody heard about Gingrich and nobody heard about Ron Paul.
Unfortunately, I see him sometimes because, you know, we're neighbors, but that's not intentional. And look, this is a very important point that maybe, you know, somehow we've forgotten, right? They not only stole the convention, and we know they stole the convention, and if somebody disputes it, the evidence is right there to see. They stole the convention. And then Sununu...
a nominee this time. I mean, let's be honest. There was no Republican nominee because a lot of the state delegations were replaced with people who weren't even legitimate state delegations. Because
exactly.
If you're 100% loyal, you know, Mitt Romney, if there were some Ron Paul guys in there, that whole state delegation got thrown out on the buses on the Magical Mystery Tour around Tampa, and they brought in a bunch of Romney yes men. So he may have got the votes, but they weren't legitimate votes. Romney was never the nominee. The GOP did not have a nominee in 2012.
Right. And it's not just Ron Paul guys, you know, the crazy libertarian infiltrators. I mean, that song is so tired, okay? Ron Paul has been a Republican, conservative Republican congressman for 23 of the last 36 years. And the people that he brought into the party, and isn't that what the future of a party is always about? Who can bring people in? Now we're hearing this whole meme about, you know, well, we're not appealing to women, and we're not appealing to Latinos, and we're not appealing to this subgroup and this subgroup. Here's Ron Paul, who showed you how to be appealing to a huge diverse group of people that would give you victories for the next two decades, and you crapped all over them. But it wasn't just them. All right, Morton Blackwell from the Commonwealth of Virginia has been a long-time traditional conservative Republican. He's not a Ron Paul guy, okay? They sent him all over the place to make sure he didn't get to the rules meeting where Sununu shoved in this rule where the presumptive nominee, allegedly Jeb Bush, gets to pick his own delegates. And guess who had presided over that floor vote? John Douchebag Boehner, okay? And he lied. He read from the teleprompter. He said, you know, all in favor of the motion, say aye. All opposed, nay. And I heard it, as many nays as there were ayes, if not more. And he went to the next line of the teleprompter and says, in the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it. The motion goes forward without objection. That objection? According to Robert's rules, if you've got one person objecting, there's an objection. Okay? So that rule is there right now. It's
half
completely
the damn floor was yelling objection.
Yeah. It completely destroys the state parties. It completely destroys the state delegations. It completely destroys your precincts, your grassroots, everything. There is no say.
It destroys the Republican Party. It's
right.
A cannon shot into the hull of the fucking party itself. That's what it is. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. It's like, oh, we don't actually have the support of the Republican voter. Right? But we'll take care of that with a lot of media coverage, hopefully. And we don't have support of the party's grassroots. So you know what? We've got to get rid of the grassroots, 86 the grassroots at the Tampa convention, and then let's enact a rule so we never have to deal with the grassroots again. Okay? Well, you don't have a party, man. I mean, it's not that you don't have voters, you don't have delegates, you don't have activists, The state parties won't deal with you. The Nevada state party just said fuck you to the RNC and the Romney campaign, wouldn't send them any money, wouldn't have a damn thing to do with them. I'm sure the Maine delegation feels about the same damn way right now. Fuck the RNC. Who gives a shit who those guys are? Oh, yeah, now they're coming back looking for money, you know? What do you want to bet I didn't see them coming first? Hey, taxi! You know, fuck them. And if you don't have have an organization. What you have is a dysfunctional organization, essentially in a state of civil war with itself, because the rhino's got to go or the conservatives got to go. And you know what? I'm just a voter. So, okay, yes, screw me. All right, well, I'll go vote somewhere else. Where are you going to get enough rhinos to ever get elected to anything? Where are all these Democrats who want to leave the Democrat Party that basically advances all these same policies but does it even more? Where they're like, well, you know, I'm down with, you know, going totally socialist on this, but, you know, I think it should be like slightly 2% less. Basically, the party's dead as far as I'm concerned.
The only thing
that's going to revitalize it is the Liberty Movement and real conservatives standing up and getting rid of these freaking rhinos. And their thing is, we're just going to build an iron curtain around the commanding heights of the Republican Party and keep these people out. Okay, well, you know, here's the thing. What if we all just go home and we go start another party? Okay, you have complete, total control of your thing, but it's your thing, and now it's just, you know, John Boehner, Reince Priebus, and John Sununu staring at each other in a room. Good party.
Will they hire Karl Rove?
Yeah, probably.
I'm sure
Karl
Rove
will be knocking on the glass door. Can I come back in? And Dick Marlin,
the simple fact is I'd like to get paid for losing another election because I'm such a loser. I'm Karl Rove. How you doing? Look, the simple fact is that you don't need to start a third party. They're already out there. And you don't need to jump ship in the Republican Party. Right now, we don't know where this is going to go. So what you do is you just, you know, fire on all fronts, okay? Support the Constitution Party. Support the Libertarian Party if you've got candidates who are coming forward with ideas with which you agree that are within the framework of the Constitution and will promote an agenda that allows you more autonomy and more liberty so you can take care of your neighbors and you can run your business and you know, revitalize this country, okay? But in the meantime, you've got to put pressure on the Republican Party to give a voice. There are conservatives in the Republican Party. There are good conservatives in the Republican Party, okay? So you've got to support them. And if you want this mess to go away, if you want to fix the party, you've got to get active at the local level. Go to your precinct meetings. Go to the central committee meetings. Go to the, you know, advance, all the meetings that they have, and make these uncomfortable statements. And furthermore, work actively to get rid of little Prince Pubic, because if you don't have a chair who knows what he's doing and who is conservative and fair-minded, then, as Tex just said, there is no party. If everything is going to come down by fiat from the powers that be and their next chosen douchebag rhino, then there's no point to any of this. There's no point to a primary. There's no point to a caucus. There's no point to a convention. There's no point to a delegation. Why the hell would anybody spend $5,000 to go to the next Republican convention if the presumptive nominee can just tell them, nah, you're not voting for me, get out of here? It's sheer insanity.
It's not free. When you're at the state convention, they're like, hey, by the way, you know, you got to be good for $5,000. You know, if you're not good, and you have to pay at the Texas convention, you have to pay right now to go. So you better have $5,000 on you or you're not going to be a delegate, right?
That's a pretty spending bus tour.
Yeah. It's not like they give you time to get the money together. It's like, do you have the money? Yes or no. Okay, you don't get out of here, right? Then you pay your own money to go to this thing, and they screw you. Who's going to pay money to do that? $5,000, just going to shit that out the window and go to this thing and then have my voice completely silenced because Reince Priebus says.
Well, not just that.
I just don't think that's a successful political model. Go ahead.
No, and you look at the work these guys go through before they ever get to the convention just to become a delegate, all the meetings and all the time. And, you know, if you got kids, getting daycare and, you know, driving to these meetings and calls and getting your friends to show up and vote for you. I mean, this process takes months, you know, to become a delegate. And then you pay $5,000 to get run around on a bus with an armed guard. What a tour idea that is. We should start a company.
Yeah. Exactly.
Gentlemen, we are in the last 6 minutes of live air, so we're probably going to go to closing thoughts in a minute. But actually, what we're talking about right now just reminds me, at the end of the Larry O'Donnell hit piece on Newt, all right, he says that Newt suffered humiliation on his road to the presidential nomination to go on to lose the GOP primary. Well, two things. One, Newt didn't lose the GOP primary, and neither did Ron Paul. They never got a shot because it was stolen from them. Now, as far as suffering humiliation, oh, I think he did. Now, I don't think that Newt was humiliated, but I think that the media narrative was to give him blow after blow after blow to humiliate him and shut him down for the very simple reason that Newt Gingrich must never be allowed to speak.
Because if you strike me down, Darth, I shall become more powerful than you can ever possibly imagine.
Exactly. Yeah. We've got three Obi-Wan Kenobis. We've got three Jedi Masters. You got Jim DeMint, who's going to be more powerful now that he's not in the Senate.
Yep.
You got Ron Paul, who's going to be way more powerful now that he's not in the Congress. And you've got Newt Gingrich, who is so powerful, they're so afraid of him. Okay, they can't let him speak because he not only lays out an agenda for how you can actually defeat Obama and box him in and make him an impotent president, all right, but he actually speaks conservatism to conservatives and then actually does conservative things. So, you know, the attack that's coming already is because of what he can do, and you've got to clear the path for him to do it by removing Boehner and removing Priebus. I'll take it to you guys.
You know who was humiliated in this election? Wasn't Ron Paul, wasn't Newt Gingrich, it was Mitt Romney.
Who?
Yeah, exactly. Come November 6th. He's the guy that's standing there like, what? What just happened? I thought I had this thing in the bag. Carl Rove, Dick Morris, you told me I had it in the bag. Yeah, well, we lied, but anyway, thanks for those contracts. And we're out of here. You know, he's the one. And then he, you know, tried to come back, oh, I'll be the national leader of the Republican Party because now I was the nominee and I'm the most recognizable Republican. Really, that says something terrible about the Republican Party if that's actually the case.
Okay.
And then he came out of the gate, you know, did a Biden where he was like, oh, you know, Mitt Romney, come please tell all these people who gave, you know, over $1 billion to get you elected president why it is that you sucked. And he was like, oh, well, because Obama was giving away free gifts. And they said, okay, thank you. Please never show up again. See, this is why you didn't get elected, because you're a gaffe a minute. You are the Republican Joe Biden, and that's why he's gone. Going away. Just poof.
Yep. Listen, we're about to run out of time, so I just want to let everybody who's listening, thank you for listening. Please continue to share the show. We're probably going to run into a little overtime because I've got someone on the line that I need to get a message out. So if you want to listen to Overtime Live, call in 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. I won't be able to bring anybody on because we're going to try to wrap this up pretty quick, but you'll be able to hear it live, otherwise archives. And please go to our Facebook page, the Tex and Rex Show on Facebook. Like the page, share it with your friends. We put the articles and the clips that we talk about on the show there, and you'll also get notifications on your timeline when we are broadcasting. And if you're in Blog Talk Radio right now, just go ahead and click follow under the show icon, and you will receive notifications as to when the shows are airing. Tex and Rex broadcast typically Sundays, 10 p.m. Eastern. Next week, we hope to be on the air. That hasn't been determined yet, as next week, remember, is the fourth Sunday of Advent. It is the 23rd of December, which is the day before Christmas Eve. So we are going to try to be on the air, but just watch our page and take notice, and we'll let you know what we managed to work out there. And with that, gentlemen, I'm going to give each of you 30 seconds, and then I've got somebody I'd like to bring on who's going to talk to us about some of the things we can probably get done locally to help fix what's going on in Washington, D.C. So why don't we go to Trog and then Tex.
No, I'm good. It was a great conversation. It needs to be talked about. You know, the only thing that I think is really important to understand, and I've said this multiple times to many different people, because we are the ones that brought forth a third-party dialogue, is until they give us 435 House members and 100 senators to vote for, we got to deal with what we have. I will support anybody and everybody that is a constitutional, conservative, libertarian, whatever, but I've got to have somebody to vote for. So, and the Republican Party still has good people in there that need support, that have given their life and their, you know, their time to get to where they're at. And until we got somebody to replace all these people, we got to deal with what we got. So that's just my input there.
No, well, absolutely right.
Exactly. We have to deal with what we have, but we also need to look at it with a critical eye and understand exactly what's going on and who's on whose side. And that's becoming a problem within the party right now. So we need to identify the actual conservative leaders that can lead us out of this mess and who the rhinos are and make sure that the rhinos don't get the leadership position and that this party becomes the actual conservative liberty movement party that the party base and the party activists want it to be and not a sellout party. We need real leaders, not John Boehner sitting there singing, "It's my party and I'll cry if I want to."
Yeah. He does that a lot. In fact, I think one of the best speeches he ever gave went something like this. Yeah, it was right after he said this.
Mr. President, this is your moment. We're ready to be led.
No, we don't want to be led by Mr. Obama or you, Mr. Boehner. All right, gentlemen, real quick before we finish up our conversation, we have on the call with us Kelly Mordecai, who's got a status update on some things. So, Kelly, you're live with Tex and Rex and Chris.
Hey, guys. How you doing tonight?
Good. Hey, how are you?
Good. Hey, Chris. Hey, Rex. Hey, you know, Rex,
hey guys.
I got to be fed up with you. We're chatting back and forth. I would hate it if you and I ever talked on the phone because we talked for hours. Anyway, we think so much alike. All right. Anyway, we got a situation here. The kill list, okay? People have been hearing about the kill list, and Obama appeared on Jay Leno, and Jay Leno slightly pressured Obama about this kill list thing and the murder of three Americans. Yes, three Americans. One was from New Mexico, one was from Colorado, Denver, one was from North Carolina. Just kind of skip the due process thing, the trial, the, you know, da-da-da-da-da. They just killed him, you know, hit him, took him out with drone planes in Yemen. And a 16-year-old was one of these three. Now, we are not without recourse. Donald Sheldon in the Libertarian Party of Broward County, Florida, submitted a complaint to a federal grand jury over this matter. Could this be the next Watergate? And he submitted a complaint, and recently we got a response back from the Department of Justice. I mean, obviously, I helped him in this complaint. The Department of Justice basically says, we're not going to investigate this. We don't mediate these kind of matters. It's like, oh, really? You're going to block a petition for redress of grievance. You're going to violate the First Amendment. You're going to violate 18 U.S.C. Section 3032 that says when an attorney, a federal attorney, receives a complaint from a citizen, he is required by the statute to inform the grand jury of the complaint. You're not going to do it. This is interesting. Could this be the fox guarding the hen house situation? So, you got a president killing people, you got a citizen going to the grand jury can investigate all the president's men, just like Nixon, Watergate, and the federal attorney says, I'm just not going to get it to the grand jury, and I'm sorry, I'm not going to do that. We have a mess.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, this is why elections have consequences, because you have a Justice Department that basically is taking justice unto itself and determining, you know, what it's going to enforce and what it's not going to enforce. And then you have, you know, executive orders and congressional legislation that's all allowing these types of things to happen. And who's going to put a stop to this?
Yes. Who? Well, everyday citizens on a federal grand jury, if they understand what's going on, they know their full power, we are going to start seeing subpoenas. The complaint is not going after, again, I helped him write it, the complaint is not going after the president, it's all the president's men. Obviously, Obama. All right, so Obama has got this kill list, and he's got men that need to carry out the orders, from the people in the first meeting all the way to those people flying the drone planes and hitting the fire button. You got a chain of command here. We're going after the chain of command, the lower chain of command. And when they start getting subpoenas, they're going to be like, you know, people have heard about this, you know, Rex 84 Coffin thing, or these detention centers and FEMA camps, whatever, whatever. Well, when people start getting subpoenas from grand juries, hey, you ain't going to do this. They're going to stop what they're doing. That's one of the bigger points we're trying to make by going to the grand jury. Our next step, Donald Sheldon is going to do, he's in the process of retaining an attorney to get in front of a judge. And he'll say in front of the judge, hey, look, you know what? We have a right to petition for redress of grievance, which the Supreme Court has affirmed. I won't go through the case law, but it's there. And this idiot is blocking a petition for redress of grievance to the grand jury. So, Your Honor, we want you to order two things. One, the complaint submitted in its entirety, and number two, independent counsel, so that they can investigate what's going on, issue a subpoena for the kill list, find out who's on it, and hold these jokers accountable. The whole point of this conversation, I don't need to go into this much more, but tomorrow night on Robert Jetter's Blog Talk Radio, the Bard's Logic. We're going to discuss this quite a bit more, and Donald's going to join us.
Well, you're talking about grand juries and subpoenaing people in the chain of command and that sort of thing, but you know, just for the sake of the listeners, can we clarify where these grand juries are? Where is this coming from? Who's doing what to whom?
Well, first of all, grand juries compose of everyday citizens. There are 89 federal districts. Quite a number of them have a special federal grand jury that is basically already established. 1832-32 applies to the grand jury. Look, here's some information. Here's some case law. You have the power. Issue the subpoena. Get the kill list. Start asking people who, what, why, and where. Just like the Nixon and the Watergate situation. It wasn't Edwin Bernstein of the Washington Post that took down a president. All the President's Men, great movie, but notice how many times I mentioned the grand jury. The grand jury was way ahead of Edwin Bernstein. It's just kind of nice to have this movie that people think that the press took down a president. Now, how many times they mentioned the grand jury multiple times? It has this power. That's why we have got to go to the grand jury and ask them, get on this before Obama starts like flying drones over our country. Well, it's too late. Before Obama starts issuing other potential problems and strikes against people he doesn't like. This is what dictators like to do, who are socialists and take over a country. We need to have a system of accountability. Oh, that's right. We do have that already.
Yeah. So let me tell you something that's kind of interesting. I know you're speaking of this topic. I want to tell you something that I just remembered as you were speaking that it was eye-popping. Okay, so a friend of mine, he's a friend and he does things, all right, so I don't want to identify too much about who he is. Okay, but there was a certain state, and they were looking at how to pay for the roads, okay? So they came up with, how are we going to pay for all these roads, right? And so the government wanted to put forward, this was the state government, this measure that would put a device in everyone's car that would track where they went and how fast they were driving, okay? And the idea was that they would be taxed based on the number of miles that they would drive in their car. That was the thing. So people who drive more, they're using the roads more, so they should pay a higher tax. So a gasoline tax doesn't get to that necessarily, even though I think that's bogus because you use a certain number of miles per gallon, right? So if you just tax the gasoline, you're already getting the tax, right? But it had this added thing where if this person was driving down a road and they exceeded the speed limit by such and such, you know, miles, they would automatically receive a ticket, whether there was anyone on the road or not, or whether it even mattered, okay? And so he had instructions, so he had a focus group, and he had instructions when he talked to this group as to words he could use and words he could not use. He could not call it a tax. He couldn't talk about tracking, because tracking was viewed as a negative word. All these soft sort of words, right? Okay, so he goes and he talks to this group of people, and he explains it using this idea, and this will lead to public safety, and this will, you know, help pay for roads, you know, which is like mom and apple pie. We love our roads and all that kind of stuff. So what do you people think about this? He said, dead silence. And then he said, some old guy raised his hand, and he's like, I love these old guys because I'm with them. And he was like, there's no way in hell I would want the government to track my movement, what I'm doing, my speed, you know. What are you going to do with this? And this information is stored somewhere. Someone's going to find it, you know. What if my wife finds it? What if I find my wife's thing? You know what I'm saying? What if the government finds out? I go, you know, like, it's just completely unnecessary. And, you know, you're under the Constitution, unlawful searches and seizures, right? You're innocent until presumed guilty, so you shouldn't be tracking my movements and what I'm doing and everything. Okay, and so he said that started a mini boomlet within this group of people about, yeah, it's all BS. And he said, and then this kid raised his hand, like 19, 20 years old, and he says, who cares? They track everything I do. I have a cell phone, so they know where I am all the time. So as long as I'm not doing anything illegal, it's okay. I mean, who cares? When I'm on the Internet, they track everything I do, too. So it's not a problem. This is really a serious problem for our civil liberties, is you have a whole generation who's growing up thinking, oh, it doesn't matter if the government knows exactly everything that I do, as long as I'm not doing anything wrong. Okay, well, I mean, look at the tax code. The tax code is 74,000 pages long, for God's sake. You know, to run the NFL regulations are only 122 pages long. You know? I mean, my God. You know, who the hell knows what the tax law is? I submit that there is no one human being on this planet that understands what the hell our tax law is, because it's fucking impossible. And most of our regulations are that way. And so,
let me interrupt you for a second. The person that actually did understand the tax code, he started studying it when he was 5 years old, and when he was 95 years old, at 95 he figured it out, but he died.
Exactly. I'm going to read 3 pages a day and internalize them and focus on it, you know?
Yeah.
Well, look, it's part of the corporate agenda, too, because, hold on, Kelly, because what Tex was just talking about, well, guess what? The progressive insurance company now sells it to you as a benefit by which to reduce your premium. So it isn't always just government that is the problem, because the corporations use government to further their agenda, and the government uses corporations to sell you their agenda. And that's what we have to watch out for, and that's precisely why we have the grand jury system. Back to you, Kelly.
Well, there's so many multiple layers here, multiple issues all at the same time. Let's start with the 18-year-old or 19-year-old who said, well, I don't have any problem. You know, if we have an honest, good, great government that looks out for our liberties, he's right. We have nothing to hide. However, if you were under Adolf Hitler's reign, you had everything to hide, even though you weren't honest. Oh, that's right. Bonhoeffer was a pastor, okay? And he had everything to hide from a corrupt government. He was helping the Jews survive. And yet they still killed Bonhoeffer. You know, with an evil, oppressive government, we have everything to hide. Even the most honest, well-to-do, great American citizen has everything to hide from a corrupt government. Oh, that's right. The Fourth Amendment protects that because they had suffered, what did they suffer? Great oppression under King George. So that's just one layer. All right, the next layer. Oh, we got these, oh, you know, all these cars, you know, they're using the roads. Bullshit. Pardon my French. By the way, I heard some French that was similar. Bullshit. I'm so right here. Look, I've done the studies. You know who degrades the roads the most? Semi-trucks. They're heavy loads.
Yeah.
If it's, cars have an absolute, maybe, what, 2 or 3% impact on the wear and tear of a road, these heavy trucks, semi-trucks, getting stuff to Walmart, the grocery store, whatever, they're the ones that damage the road. Oh, that's right. They only make like 6 or 8 miles per gallon, and they're paying up to the wazoo for the gas tax through the diesel. It's a pretty good system. It already works. It is complete BS, blah, 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 swear it. It is unbelievable that some idiot government official would think that we need to monitor every car. Come on.
It's just a way, it's a money grab. Because, look, the thing is, oh, yeah, we have to maintain the road. So, you know, we have a gas tax that's supposed to do that. But I guess we don't have enough tax, right? Well, what are you spending all this money on? That's the problem. Your budgets always grow every freaking year, and every year you're coming back with a new tax proposal to pay for the gap in the budget. Why the hell are you spending more money this year than you were last year? The federal government, it's because they adjust everything for inflation. Well, who determines what the hell inflation is? The government.
The Federal Reserve.
Yeah, they say what inflation is, right? Okay, so inflation's really high now, so now it went up, so now everybody's got to pay more, so now we got to tax more. Until eventually, you're back in the Middle Ages, and the government owns everything, and everyone's just a serf on their land. We're all renters. I mean, what is a property tax? You go buy land, you don't own it, you're renting it, because try not paying your property tax. You'll find out really soon that you don't own that fucking land anymore, because you don't own it. you rent it.
And you take out a mortgage so that you can pay on it for the rest of your life. A debt obligation.
Right.
And that's because of inflation. Go ahead, Kelly.
Whoever proposed this legislation to put devices to track your road usage, I'm sorry, they are absolutely clueless, and they work for the Department of Redundancy Department.
Absolutely.
They need to track your motion. They need to know where you are at all times, because as soon as you stop being a good cog in the machine, they got to get rid of you or marginalize you or smear you. And if you're a public person, like, say, Ron Paul or Newt Gingrich, they got to go after you hard. And I don't know if you heard the show earlier, Kelly, but we were listening to a Rosie O'Donnell bit, Larry O'Donnell bit, where he's basically setting it up to take down Newt Gingrich because they're afraid he might, you know, speak again and get some things done. So, you know, the power of the grand jury is very important, because it is the only way. Look, the solutions are not coming from Washington, D.C. They're never going to come from Washington, D.C. The corruption is just way too entrenched. It's going to require the states, and most of the states are going to require the people to take action and make it happen. That's why this is an important conversation.
Well, absolutely. And I am really excited about the power of the grand jury, because they do not get their monthly check and their health care benefits and all the benefits and vacations, yada, yada, yada. The grand jury are just everyday citizens, everyday people. They are not dependent upon the government. When you have a system that's corrupt, you're going to protect your own. Judges protect DAs, DAs protect judges, they protect police officers, whatever, yada, 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 yada. Well, that's right. You know, citizens able to look into what's going on with the government. Let me tell you a story. Oh, gosh, this is one of the best stories I've heard in a long time. Last January, James Manship Renwick, he was in Virginia. He was watching a corrupt judge in Winchester. It's a city there in Virginia.
I know that dude.
Do you know Mr. Manship?
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah, well, he named his son Mark. Mark Manship, yes. All right. Anyway, so he'd been watching this corrupt judge for years, and he felt helpless. He found out about the grand jury. January of last year, he filed a complaint with the grand jury in the morning, late morning. That afternoon, the judge wrote a letter. I'm thinking early retirement. Yes, I'm leaving. Yeah, I got cancer. Oh, really? You got cancer? Yeah, it's called cancer of the purse. If you're indicted, you lose your benefits for life. Your retirement is done, you schmuck. And so this guy retired. This is how the grand jury should work. It has worked this way for what? Oh, about 800 years now. And so when we can do this, when we can hold our government accountable by citizens who are suffering in the private sector and seeing some government schmuck that lives their life, oh, you know, I just decided to work out for the first hour of my life and the first hour of my morning, and, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't work an hour like I was supposed to, but I was at the gym, you know, and I was like, I've heard these stories. Look, okay, we need to have a government that works like the private sector, not happening. But the private sector people get to watch our government, the corruption, the oppression, yada, yada, this century. Again, 8 centuries this has been in existence. It's time that we make a change. It's time we learn about this. It's time we hold the government people to account of the world that we are suffering in, the world we are living in, the world we're having a tough time paying our bills. Well, you government people are just passing new bills to suck the money out of us so you can have your nice, cushy life. Forget it.
Yep. Yes.
Absolutely. I mean, the problem is the natural inclination of government to grow and for liberty to retreat unless the people are vigilant. And right now, vast swaths of the population are not being vigilant. And as they sink further into economic ruin, they become even less vigilant and more dependent on government or looking to government to solve their problems, when that's the source of our problems, not the solution. That's what Ronald Reagan said.
Correct. All right, we're going to get ready to wrap this up, bring it back to the conversation, kind of do our final thoughts, but we'll go with you, Kelly, first. Can you tell our audience where they can go and what they can do to support this and affect change?
All right, Hidden Forth Branch, the number 4TH, HiddenForthBranch.com. 9B Kill This Complaint Blocked is the name of it. Kind of read that. I posted it on Facebook. It's going all over the place. But basically, we're going to be on Blog Talk Radio tomorrow night, 7 o'clock Pacific time, where Donald Sheldon, who is a complainant, he's going to talk about the department shuffle, yada, yada. But we're going to talk about this, and we're going to expose the American people. Look, we can do this. Here's the court cases. We have this power. We don't want a president killing people. So I hope people can join up with the radio talk show conversation. And I just hope they feel empowered. That's why I wrote the book. So people feel empowered. People read the book, they feel empowered to file complaints. They see stuff happen. It's beautiful. That's the way it's supposed to be. So, yeah, just join us tomorrow night. I would just love to have thousands, tens of thousands of people enjoying that they can be empowered, that they have solutions, they can move forward. We can hold our government accountable. So I invite everybody, join our blog talk, go to the website, learn a little bit, enjoy the conversation, feel empowered, and get into action.
Great.
Absolutely.
All right, well,
that's
thank you.
The most important thing, is that I think people should not feel powerless against the leadership or against what's going on with the government. There are all these levers of power that we have that are legitimately given to us, and we can work within the system and use the system to fix the system, because the Founding Fathers gave us all these things. We just forgot them, and we need to get back into the control room and start steering the ship, because the people doing it are steering it right into their own pocket. That's really the problem.
Bingo.
Absolutely. All right, so everybody join Kelly tomorrow night with Robert Jetter on Bard's Logic Political Talk. Kelly, thanks for calling in. Chris, why don't we go to you for your final thoughts, and then Tex and I are going to bring it home. Thanks, Kelly. Chris is not there. All right, Tex, to you.
Final thoughts. Well, Boehner's got to go. That's number one. He's just sold you out. You're going to get a little Christmas present. Remember, a couple years back when you got a Christmas present and it was mandatory health care in the form of Obamacare. Well, you know, grab your ankles because you're about to get a new Christmas present this time, and it's going to be this omnibus budget bullshit, whatever the hell they agreed to screw you over. And Boehner is at the forefront of this because he is the weakest, lamest, most worthless Speaker of the House in modern memory, except perhaps Dennis Hastert. I mean, I got to admit, Dennis Hastert was pretty freaking weak and useless. But Boehner is equally as bad, and he's got to go, and we got to find a new champion. And the other thing is, if you want to rebuild this party, you have to find people that are good, and you have to support them, and you have to build them up, and you have to give confidence to them that when they're acting that you are behind them. Because imagine if you're that person on TV, you're Alan West, standing up for conservative principles, and the media is coming at you, and in the background, the party is coming at you too, and you feel alone and isolated. If you're sitting at your house chomping on some popcorn watching TV while Alan West is up there frying on, you know, TV, feeling all this pressure, and you're doing nothing, you have created a situation in which that person would fail. You need to create and enable situations where they can win. And this is why Newt Gingrich had such a successful media strategy, because he got all the House members involved, going back to their districts. He made all the districts feel involved in what was going on, and he informed them what was happening. And we had just the party worked better than I'd ever seen it work in my entire life. And Washington couldn't stand it, and they had to shut him down. But this time we're going to have to build it from the bottom up, because I don't know where the good people are at the top anymore. Every time I look at someone at the top, it's just another fucking rhino, and we can't have that. This party has a rhino virus. It either will be cured of this virus or this party will die. This is a terminal condition that it has.
Yes, that's exactly the problem. And, in fact, about 2 hours ago, according to the Washington Post, on Friday, in talks with President Obama, John Boehner actually told him that he would include a increase in the debt ceiling so that there would have to be no fight over the debt limit for at least 12 more months. This guy is handing every single most terrible thing to Obama on a silver platter in order to make himself look good and like a bipartisan doer when in fact he's nothing but a crying capitulator.
Call I've never his seen office. A guy grab his ass with both hands like that. I mean, really, it's pretty amazing.
It's just frightening. Call this little crying bitch's office. The number is 202-225-0600. Tell him to quit compromising and quit being such a wuss and quit handing everything to Obama that he needs, because he doesn't have to do this. He has the power. Newt Gingrich laid out the plan. We talked about it last week's show, and it's a very powerful way of the House Speaker managing the president of these negotiations. Newt Gingrich did it to Clinton, and John Boehner can, if he has the will, do it to Barack Obama. But he's not, and that's the one reason, well, it's the number one reason why this guy's got to go. The vote for Speaker is on January 3rd, okay? Your congressmen are coming home soon for the Christmas holiday. Hammer them at their offices. Call the congressmen who are standing up to Boehner. Call Amash, call Schweikert, call Hulskamp, call Gohmert, call Jones. Ask their offices who else you can, you know, hammer, who are the likely other, you know, let's see, those are five guys, so we need 11 more. You get 11 more guys to either, or gals, to either abstain or to vote for somebody other than John Boehner. He will be finished on January 3rd. And make sure that you let the RNC know that they will get nothing from you. They won't get a vote. They won't get a penny. They won't get a yard sign. They won't get a bumper sticker for any candidate if they reelect Little Prince Pubic as the RNC chair. Tell them you want someone like J.C. Watts. Make your calls. I know it's Advent now. We're approaching Christmas. And then, you know, New Year's, and there's a lot of things going on, and holiday parties and Christmas cookies, and it's all wonderful stuff, and it's all very important. Of course, the most important thing is the celebration of the Nativity of our Lord Jesus Christ. But time is of the essence. January 3rd is not that far away. Take a little bit of time. Make some calls. Wake some people up. This is very, very important stuff. Let's do this together. Please share the show with people. You can download the MP3 by going to our Blog Talk Radio page and right-clicking on the download link, and you can email that to people. You can send them John Boehner's information. Go to our Facebook page. That's the Tex and Rex Show on Facebook, and I've got all the articles and clips that Tex and I have talked about there for your use. And join Chris Shipler at the Coalition of Freedom on Facebook. Lots of good conversations there about things that you can do to change the conversation and the rise of conservatism. There's a website also, Dump John Boehner, that's very helpful on Facebook, group Dump John Boehner. There's a lot of good information there. And just make sure that you share this with people and get things done, because this is our country. We're predominantly conservative. We believe in the Constitution. We believe in local government. We believe in federalism. We believe in taking care of each other, not having the government do it for us. We believe that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and all the laws they pass that are extra-constitutional, like the president's kill list that Kelly was talking about, are things that have to be reversed. This is not a time to be afraid, because this is a great time. This is an exciting time. They have gone so far over this cliff, not the fiscal cliff, but this statist cliff, this corporatist Keynesian mess. They've gone so far, they've been doing it for 100 years, that so many more people are aware. It's a great time to be an American.
You can make the fraud so apparent that you have to make the mental choice to deny that it's happening. But at this point, it's so clear what this party is and what it has become and what it was under Reagan and under Gingrich, that you can fix it, or you can walk away in clean conscience and go to a new party if it comes to that.
Exactly. And the pressure must mount from inside and outside. But the acute tactical problem right now is replacing this loser, Pubis, as the RNC chair, and replacing this other loser, John Boehner, as Speaker of the House. No matter where they go with this fiscal cliff, it doesn't matter. He's got to go no matter what. So mount the pressure and be excited about the fact that you were put here at this time to exercise the powers, the levers of power in our civilized world to check corporatist government, to check tyrannical government, and to really do something meaningful. So don't be afraid. Don't think you're alone, because we are the majority, but a lot of people are just unaware of the power that, we have to affect what happens in government. It is not just at the ballot box. We have a lot of other resources. Get to know them. Get involved. Get informed, because liberty is rising. The duopoly is ending, and we'll see you next week. This is Tex and Rex signing off.
Final thought, the fiscal cliff was created by John Boehner because he had the power to stop it or not bring it to a vote in the first place. He brought it to a vote, and thus he brought us here. This is poor leadership. You know it's poor leadership. The man has to go. He is not the right man for the job. Tex and Rex signing off. The flames of liberty will never die.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. Take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.